So let's call to order the regular meeting and special public hearing of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, September 14th, 2017. First item is today is the roll call of the Planning Commission. So first, Commissioner Gildersleeve, Commissioner Heller.
Here.
Commissioner Lucky, Commissioner Miller.
Here.
Commissioner Ryan.
Here.
Commissioner Von Trapp.
Here.
So tonight we have five commissioners meeting our quorum. The purpose of this legislative meeting is to discuss the proposed amendments to North Bend Ordinance 1624, 1626, but before we get there, we're going to talk about our updated Planning Commission procedures. This meeting is being recorded, and the audio of the recording as well as published minutes will be available on the city's website following this meeting. First thing we'll do is approve the minutes, then we'll hear from our staff on any updates or changes to each topic. When we get into our public hearings, we'll give you time to speak and make comments to us. After that, we might discuss it further or have questions for staff. Whether we make a decision tonight or not, it eventually will move to City Council where they can also still hold a hearing. If we do not take any action, the City Council can still take it up without us. They very rarely do that, but that is their option as well. So next item is to approve this evening's agenda. Do I have a motion?
Move the minutes be
the agenda. Agenda.
Okay.
We have a motion by Commissioner Ryan, second by Commissioner Von Trapp. Any comments or changes? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Agenda approved. It's unanimous. Next item is the approval of minutes for the August 24th, 2017 meeting. Do I have a motion?
Move.
And a motion by Commissioner Von Trapp, second by Commissioner Ryan. Any comments or changes?
I'd like to comment on the nature of the minutes. They were very articulate, very precise. I appreciate that.
I would agree with you. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. Spent a lot of time on them.
Okay. All those in favor of approving the August 24, 2017 minutes, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Minutes are approved. It's unanimous. Next item agenda is public comment on non-agenda items. Is there anybody here from the public that wishes to address the commission on something that is not on tonight's agenda? Seeing none, we'll move on to item number four, which is the Planning Commission procedures. And as you know, this is, what, about a year-long effort? So I thank the commission not only for their input, but also hope that all changes have been captured. With that, are there any comments or changes? Yes, Commissioner Ryan.
Mr. Chair, I read these probably a dozen times, but I think I caught something I didn't see before, and then it's on page four.
Okay.
Paragraph 3.1. D.2. Second line, these conversations may not be audible on the tape recording. It may jeopardize the record of meeting. I wonder if that word not should be removed. Where would read, these conversations may be audible on the tape recording. It may jeopardize the period, the record of meeting. Does that change the sense of that subject anyway?
I think it's okay as is, since the first sentence says you should avoid whispered conversations because then it wouldn't be audible on the tape recorder.
And the point is that we want our conversations to be audible and on the recorder.
Exactly. And so they may not be audible means you'll be over talking the conversation.
But what it's saying is since they're not audible on the tape recording, that they'll jeopardize the record because they're not on the recording.
I think you have to read the first sentence before going to the second one, that they should, commissioners should avoid whispered conversation because these conversations may not be audible on the tape.
This, I just thought it was nuance. No problem.
It could have been written more succinctly.
Yeah, no, that's a good catch. Thanks for reading that so detailed.
Okay. Anything else, sir? No? Anyone else? Okay. Okay, there's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
So a motion by Commissioner Ryan, second by Commissioner Miller. Any final comments or changes?
I feel like it's a long time coming, and it's been a lot of work on it. It's nice to see the finished result.
I agree. What was it? 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
About time for new procedures. All right. All those in favor of approving the updated North Bend Planning Commissioner procedures, say aye.
Aye.
Motion is approved. It is unanimous. I'd ask the staff that once you have an opportunity, please update the Planning Commission site and post these in place of the updated procedures.
Okay.
And then the only other issue is the quorum, which the City Council must mm-hmm. approve. Mm-hmm. And so we'll need to change that once they do.
Mm-hmm.
Is everybody clear on that?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next item on the agenda is the public hearing on Ordinance 1624, a moratorium for acceptance of applications for permits or approvals for single-family dwellings within the neighborhood business zone, interchange mixed-use zone, and within special districts. Who's taking this up? Ms. Burrell, would you like to give us any updates or introduction?
Sure. I have a couple things to pass out regarding this topic. So we have a moratorium in place. Ordinance 1624 enacted this moratorium, and it's been renewed once. It's up for expiration October 17th, I believe, is the actual October 18th. There's a council meeting on October 17th, so we have a little bit of time. If there's a desire to take action on this, we have a solution to kind of present tonight. Part of it, the Planning Commission's already previously addressed. And otherwise, we would have to renew the moratorium. It's always good to clean things up, close things up if we can, generally. So, again, this moratorium is on acceptance of applications for permits or approvals for single-family dwellings in the neighborhood business zone, that's in our blue zone throughout the city, in the interchange mixed-use IMU zone, that's the purple, or sorry, the turquoise-blue colored zone, and within special districts. And special districts are the urban separator overlay district and any of the other overlays where, again, single family might be allowed. So, back on June 22nd, 2017, the North Bend Planning Commission made a recommendation related to dockets 6 and 10, and that was recommending no single family be allowed in the NB zones. We talked about that at length, had a hearing related to that back in May. So no single family be allowed in the NB and the USOD, so the area up off of Bulch and 202 as you head towards Snoqualmie, that blue area, and the other blue areas of the city. There was also a recommendation that same night, June 22nd, from the Planning Commission to recommend redesignating certain parcels within the Neighborhood Business District between Southeast 140th and Southeast North Bend Way. And I'll pass out a map, and that's on the east side of town, that those we should consider with our next comprehensive plan update, those going from commercial to residential and possibly neighborhood business zoning to low-density zoning. So what I'll do is pass out a map of that area and what we're going to recommend we do with this specific area. It's a little unique compared with the rest of the NB zone. And then we also received a comment letter today related to this area. And so, on page 17 of the packet, you'll see the first recommendation for the permitted uses is to take out those single-family uses in the NB zone. There is IMU right now allows cottages, and the urban separator overlay. Like I said, we took out that allowance. The next proposal is to create a neighborhood business residential overlay district for the properties shown on page 18 and that I just handed out, just to clarify. The reason is if we take single-family residential uses out of the NB zone, then all those homes in that area would become existing non-conforming. We've recognized that that area is on a private road, that it has a lot of existing residential, and so this overlay would allow them to continue to have neighborhood business uses, but also to allow single-family residential. And the best way to do that is an overlay. So the letter that was provided, and the gentleman's here tonight, I'm not sure if he will want to speak, Mr. Isbell, owns a property on the 140th side, and he came in and it has a shop on it, and he wanted to build another shop or office, possibly even retail or commercial use on the property. So with the overlay in place, that would be possible. If we go forward in our comprehensive plan amendment and just want to rezone, then it would limit properties, and we've heard some comments related to that. So at this point, it's open. We're not changing zoning, and we're not changing the underlying land use. We're just doing an overlay to allow this area to have residential. So if you guys have any questions, let me know, or we can hear from the public if there's any comments. And go from there.
Was that clear to the commission as far as the description and what we're doing and what we're not doing is changing the zoning, but
making allowances.
Mm-hmm. And no other comments other than the one have come in?
This is the current one. You know, we had received other comments on this topic. Which I described a bit on page 16, the last finding, number 9, that we've heard kind of differences. We've heard some people have had concern about what could be a down zone. They've paid ULID payments on the highest and best use. Then others want to build single family. They want a short plat. They want some assurance that their neighborhood will kind of stay residential. So,
and so when we did some of the changes in the permitted uses table,
right,
you could build an accessory dwelling unit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't build a just standalone single family structure. Full.
Right. Right. Yeah, and this matches what we also did in the permitted uses that will be coming forward. But in an effort to try to remove the moratorium, we're bringing it forward.
Okay. Are there any questions for the staff before we go into our public hearing?
I'm wondering the difference here between having this a neighborhood business MPOD versus changing it to LDR.
So you made a recommendation, you did make a recommendation to support that. Again, it can't happen until our comprehensive plan is update is opened, and that is only once a year. The soonest we can open it again is March. So because there's a land use designation of commercial on it, that would need to be changed to residential, and then the zoning would need to be changed. And so I guess this gives you more time to think about if that's the right solution or leaving this in place. I mean, and I think the Planning Commission's discussion about it was just it does get confusing with all these overlays. I kind of cringed when we, that was our solution, was coming up with another one. Wanting to just show what we want to see on the map. And that's what's hard with some of these areas that have just kind of evolved and have been neighborhood business, because it truly has allowed a variety of uses throughout the past. So.
All right. Well, before I open up the public hearing, the procedures for this item will be 5 minutes of speaking time. Before you speak, please state your name and your address clearly. For the record, you should make comments only related to this item and this item only, not to another item on our agenda. With that, is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak on this item? Yes, sir. Please state your name and address for the record.
My name is James Smith. My address is 14011 450 Fifth Avenue, Southeast, North Fifth, 98045. I want to address my application for a short plot that's already in, that's on hold. Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to come up, comment on the proposed rezone of the neighborhood business district and current moratorium on a single family home in the district. My wife and I lived in North, or in, my wife and I live in the neighborhood business district. I'm sorry. We bought a lot in 2012 to build our home, which we finished in 2014. In 2016, we decided to divide our lot and build a new home. We were informed that our application is on hold due to a memorandum, a moratorium under ordinance number 1603. We understand that the moratorium was put in place while the city considers the complete rezone of our neighborhood to commercial use only. In the interest of our personal and financial hardship, we first ask that you do not extend the moratorium or rezone our district to permit only commercial use and uphold the residential family-oriented nature of the community. If this is not possible, we ask that you make an exception to allow us to divide our lot and build our home. First, a rezone to commercial use would conflict with the existing residential character of the neighborhood. Most of the lots in the neighborhood are already developed with homes. Existing businesses in the area primarily support residential use. The zoning should not be changed. The neighborhood business district allows for banks, taverns, farmers markets, supermarkets, health clubs, coffee stands, retail, art studios, and theaters, as well as medical and dental offices. These neighborhood businesses are more compatible with existing homes than purely commercial use. Use under commercial zoning are more likely to be incompatible with existing homes in the neighborhood. Second, if the city decides that extension of the moratorium is applicable or appropriate, we ask for your help by granting us a small exception to allow us to divide our property and build a single home on our lot. My wife and I are not professional developers. We only wish to build a single home on one lot. For our own home, we already invested a significant amount of time and money seeking approval for this from the city. Since 2016, we have paid application fees and worked to satisfy the city conditions to divide the property, including by hiring attorneys to assist in negotiating private street easements with our neighbors. The moratorium and potential rezone has caused a hardship on us and may result in the loss of the money that we have invested. The exception we request is consistent with the spirit of the exception that is already in the moratorium ordinance. Exception B permits construction of one single-family house on a single existing lot. The moratorium caught us partway through the process of creating one lot on which we would build our home. The exception would not be for the purpose of creating several lots for many homes. It would not result in an incompatible with surrounding uses because property is surrounded by many other homes. An exception allowing us to finish our lot would be fair and reasonable because it will alleviate our hardship by permitting us to consist with the neighborhood. And pretty much we just want to build a single home.
Sorry, I did hit the right dismiss button. Thank you for your comments, Mr. Schmidt. Is there anybody else that wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing at 7:24. Questions for staff or comments? I'd just like to clarify, so what the change is neighborhood business and not allowing any single family homes. And so in this instance, he's an existing home in the neighborhood business, and we have an allowance B which says you could build one home. How does this either prevent him from doing that or allow him to do that in his scenario?
He had not completed his short plat, so he has one lot and one home. His short plat is to create a second lot and build one home. So by addressing the moratorium with the recommendation we put forward, that would solve his problem, or by amending it, as he suggested in his letter, which I passed out at the last meeting. But he was... kind of caught in an unfortunate timing because he had his application and then the moratorium came into place.
The application was not in, the moratorium was in place, otherwise he'd have been vested to the old code. So,
right.
But he had already started with the surveyor. We'd already had a pre-application review meeting and discussed, you know, the road, all the things that would be needed, and then the moratorium came into place.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions?
So it's really just the moratorium that's holding up this specific process.
If it were to go to NB, if it were to convert to NB and remove residential use out of the NB, then you wouldn't be able to short plat it for single family residential use.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
How many, Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
How many other citizens have or caught the similar decisions, Mr. Smith?
That's a good one for staff. We haven't heard.
There is. Alan.
Oh yeah, there is. There is a property owner that wants to do townhomes.
Yeah, but so there's a few people that have been are kind of waiting to see what they can do with their property.
More related, yeah, it's related to the
NB. This is the only citizen that I've spoken with that is really, you know, affected. That's wanting to do something right now and isn't able to, that I've spoken with.
And of course, we have no idea how many other citizens are thinking about it, but haven't done anything about it still here.
Yeah, we certainly get inquiries, and we'd let them know where it's at right now, and so they're waiting just to find out what happened. So it is difficult for property owners, the moratoriums.
So in Section 3, exemptions, permits and approvals for a single building permit to construct one single-family detached dwelling and any permitted associated accessory dwelling units on a single existing lot. So is this, am I not getting it? Because why wouldn't he be able to?
So there's one lot, and the way that they built their house was they put it on one side with the intention of short platting it and creating a second lot to put their home on. But the way the language is written, you can't, it's only if you already have a lot. Mm-hmm. You can't create a new lot and put a home on it. If he had two separate parcels, tax mm-hmm. identification parcels, then he could. Mm-hmm. So if the short plat had already happened, mm-hmm. he'd be able to build on it.
Any ULD would have been for one parcel. But under our zoning code, you can have a lot of 10,000 or mm-hmm. 8,000 square feet, and so you can divide up mm-hmm. a larger parcel.
Maybe I misunderstood. The ULID was likely not, was probably done for more than one, because mm-hmm. It would have been for a neighborhood business. Mm-hmm. So it would not have been for one parcel. It would have been for the highest and best use, which mm-hmm. is commercial, and that's where a lot of people don't want to be downzoned, because they were assessed at the commercial.
So in some of those instances, our city administrator might be thinking that we could mitigate some of the losses in perhaps street improvements or...
Yeah, that's been discussed, and I guess we will go there again if we bring it up as a comprehensive plan amendment and a rezone. Yeah, I think
you should look at what is right there, and that would get pretty that could be a complicated further out. So you should look at what you think is best there, not assuming that mm-hmm. will happen. Mm-hmm.
If I remember correctly, that like I guess the nature of the docket was to have this side of 140th be more compatible with the opposite side, you know, mm-hmm. being residential and not wanting to disrupt that, which sounded great, you know. And then you hear from the people who actually live there, and I feel like that needs to weigh heavily. So if I was to put myself in those shoes. Change would be difficult, and so I see, you know, I hear one homeowner or landowner who's in support of the residential, which is kind of the nature of the original docket, and then another landowner who wants the original neighborhood business allowances, and you know, it seems like the common or you know the logical conclusion would be this overlay district. Mm-hmm. It, as challenging yeah. as that is to have another overlay, mm-hmm. Considering the people who are there who've invested mm-hmm. a lot in that, mm-hmm. if that's something that mm-hmm. makes sense for that area, I feel like, and that needs mm-hmm. to make sense for us.
Mm-hmm. So you're thinking if there was an allowance, it wouldn't be an issue, because you know, we keep with our original intent, and that is to have that single-family compatibility on that side of the road. And so what I'm looking at is the wording in B, it says existing lot. So what would be your recommendation, I guess, how to word that so he would be able to, or somebody like that, would be able to subdivide as long as they're within our zoning guidelines for single-family?
Well, for someone in the particular situation that we have right here, you'd have to allow a short plat. You'd have to allow at least one short plat. If we had Google Maps pulled up and you were to look at this neighborhood, though, what you'll see is it's pretty, the residential that's off the private street is pretty well built out, actually. There's not a lot of lots. There's a couple that if people wanted to maybe move a shed or something, they could short plat and put another one on, but this is one of the last lots that has development potential, so there are not, I don't see this being a common issue within here, nor is there a big lot that could be short platted into 20 homes. Mm-hmm. It's pretty well built out in there, within that private street. Once you, mm-hmm. I'm not talking about all along 140th, because there's more lots available for redevelopment there.
Okay. Any suggestions? Or
this is an area of town that's been mixed for years. Mm-hmm. People moved out there of septic going and that kind of thing. And the development happened westerly, but people could afford to buy a lot and put a small home out there. They've done that, and most of the residential, the commercial and industrial uses around them, they're willing to accept that. And if the people who live in that kind of neighborhood deserve a chance to have a happy life. And I think that if they're, they know what they're building into, they know they're building into a commercial kind of community eventually. So if they want to be that one house surrounded by buildings, that's their choice. But I think that for now, I think we'll find a way to make it happen.
Okay.
Yeah, I think my comments are that ideally that area wouldn't have been built out the way it was, and it would have been this nice blue neighborhood business. We have a lot of neighborhood business in there. But after looking on Google Maps, it's homes through there, and there's some new nice homes. And I mean, what are you going to do? You know, just try to force something there. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I get that it's just the way it is.
So if we insert after existing lot or short plat, does that then?
Well, it sounds like you're just talking about an addition to the moratorium, not if you're looking at Section 3 exemptions.
Yep.
So wouldn't this go away? The idea being your code changes here in the memo would remove the ordinance. The ordinance would be repealed.
So you would want to put... Can you restate?
No, so,
were you talking about the exemption
amendment? So how is he limited, I guess, if in this docket? How is...
He is allowed... under page, let's see, what page is that in my packet, because I've got my version here. So page 18. B, allowable uses in bulk and dimensional. Uses within the neighborhood business MPOD are established corresponding to the zones identified in the figure. So the LDR, this should show, actually, the blue is completely over. This has yellow. So may be comprised of neighborhood business uses, except single family detached and cottage are allowed within the overlay.
So let me ask this, does his property border these in a continuous fashion?
He is one of these yellow properties, yes.
Okay, so then wouldn't it be single family and he would be allowed to build?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. This solves his problem.
That Jamie has would.
Yep. Solves his problem.
Okay.
As well as anybody else who wants to do. So it continues to allow neighborhood business uses, and it allows single family. The reason we have to do it is because the rest of NB, to address this moratorium, is removing single family.
Got it.
From NB.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's complicated. Sorry.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Had to get there.
So that means I would be able to build with this cap?
With the proposals that Jamie has today, yes, it would allow both commercial and residential. But not multifamily, which I think was being taken out of the NB zone. So
right.
It would just be putting single family or cottages or single family as well, but wouldn't it be putting duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes back into that neighborhood business zone?
Got it.
So those are being removed still.
Which is on page 17.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so that addresses both the gentleman's report tonight as well as this, which seems to be pretty consistent with that area to begin with.
Yeah, it does.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm clear, I read it wrong. So. All right. Any other comments or changes? You ready for a question?
I'm not sure how to frame the motion.
Are you ready? Yes. Is there anybody that's willing to make a motion to approve Ordinance 1624, moratorium for acceptance of applications for permits or approvals for single-family dwellings within a neighborhood business zone, interchange mixed-use zone, and within special districts?
So moved.
So we're not just to clarify, we're not approving Ordinance 1624. That is the ordinance we are wishing to eliminate. So it would be...
I want it nice and easy.
The Exhibit A proposed... Exhibit A proposed code amendments to address, on the top of page 17, Exhibit A proposed code amendments to address Ordinance 1624. That would be your motion.
So if you were to adopt Exhibit A, this
would address ordinance.
Fully? Because there are in B zones that they don't want residential in as well.
Right here.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Okay, so that moratorium would go away. So Exhibit A would adopt. Right.
That's your recommendation to, it would go to council committee, and then from there.
Tell us how to phrase it.
So, is there a motion to approve Exhibit A proposed code amendments to address Ordinance 1624?
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve Exhibit A proposed code amendments to address Ordinance 1624 moratorium.
We have a motion and a second. A second by Commissioner Von Trapp and a motion by Commissioner Ryan. Is there any further comment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion is approved. It's unanimous. Thank you, staff, for helping us work through that.
Look at you guys. You are on schedule, too.
All right. Item number 6 on our agenda is a public hearing for code amendments associated with Ordinance 1626, the interim zoning regulations related to Tanner Landing and Tanner Junction MPOD. Ms. Burrell?
Sure.
Would you like to give us an introduction since this is new?
Sure. So we have interim regulations in place. Similar to moratorium, we are trying to resolve some of these if we can. They continue to have to be renewed. This one is particularly confusing, hard to track if you haven't been following. There has been a series of interim regulations on the property. What I provided in the packet was the latest, which is Ordinance 1624. So far, that has been council's recommended. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, next one, right? This is the same one we just did.
Sorry, 1620. The original ordinance was Ordinance 1611, which was then amended by 1611A, and then to 1626. So, like I said, three versions of interim regulations. These apply to the Tanner Junction Master Plan Overlay District and the Tanner Landing Master Plan Overlay District, which I think you all are familiar with. We had planned to hold a public hearing on this tonight, but not deliberate too much because of your workload. We are trying to get through the wireless facilities, so I'll leave that up to you, but definitely ask questions. We have public here to speak, I think, and we have a vested project on the Tanner Landing that, again, is vested to the 1611A. And I'll go ahead and pass that out for you. Track changes, which is also shown in your packet. Let's see. We had thought to allow more time for you to deliberate at the next meeting,
okay,
in order to provide a recommendation to council. These interim regulations expire in December, so again, they can be renewed or addressed. And I guess at this point, I would like to just open up probably the public hearing. We'll have more time to deliberate and discuss as it goes on. But
okay,
James.
Yeah.
Is this starting on page 31?
Yes, 31.
And the handout, again, that you did was 1611-A, and that's right. What the current development is proposed under.
Right, right. And that version, like I said, shows the changes. I made some notations to help try to clarify in your mind what the changes are. So.
The changes from the initial panel landing.
Right.
Master plan.
Right. Right. Everything you're seeing in track changes is are the changes that have...
From the 2016 agreement.
Right. From inception of the overlay. Yeah. We had an overlay created for this area. Then it's been amended with those regulations, the interim regulations.
Okay. Has everybody signed in that wishes to speak on this? Just a reminder for this public hearing, you'll each be provided 5 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address clearly for the record. Make comments only related to this item, and please direct them towards the chair. With that, we'll go ahead and open up the public hearing.
Question, Mr. Chair.
Uh-huh.
If there's a person that wants to speak to the group, will there be a lot more time?
We can provide for that, and I know one person is here to speak on behalf of others. Yes. So we'll go ahead and open up the public hearing at 7:43. First person on the list is Cherie Cooper. Do you wish to speak to this item, 1626?
Yes.
Okay. Please state your name and address for the record.
My name is Cherie Cooper. My address is 301 North Tacoma Avenue. Here tonight to speak on behalf of my family who owns 30 of the 36 acres in the entire Junction Master Plan Overlay District. With regard to Ordinance 1626, we vehemently object to the city's action of rezoning our property to only allow for EP1 development. My objective at this hearing is to provide the Planning Commission with a conceptual overview of our development vision for the property, so that the city then becomes more encouraged to potentially rescind rezone action specified in Ordinance 1626. The Dahlgren family and Mr. Higgs continue to move forward in process with the city for their individual development projects that will result in approximately 341 multifamily units in the Tanner Landing and the Tanner Junction Master Plan Overlay Districts. For these property owners of the Tanner Overlay Districts, their mixed-use overlay zoning has not been challenged. Their mixed-use zoning has not been changed to thereby thwart or deny a highest and best use HDR EP1 development proposal. We want to convey and have it be understood by the city that since purchasing the 30 acres in North Bend, our development vision for the property has always been that of a mixed-use village concept. A unique and innovative blend of commercial and residential dwelling space with assorted buildings nestled in established alpine landscape that would showcase the village as belonging to, not competing with, or offending the surrounding topography that iconically defines North Bend. A mixed-use development project inclusive of substantive amenities that provide for diverse functionality and many life, work, play, lifestyle choices, so that a variety of individuals requiring or desiring housing and employment alternatives in North Bend have options that currently do not exist within other development projects in or near the city. We understand and respect that there is a balance to strike in managing the present, the future, the necessary, and the inevitable growth development of North Bend. Last month, my father and I met with Senior Planner Jamie Burrell, Community and Economic Development Director David Miller, and Mayor Ken Hearing. Our conversation was productive and encouraging from both sides of the table, with all perspectives taken into objective consideration. We are optimistic moving forward to believe that there is the opportunity in the foundation to address and to determine more effective resolve and alternative to EP1 zoning being the only allowed use for development of our property. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, next person I have, thank you. Next person on the list is James Smith. Do you wish to speak to this item?
He left. He spoke on the other item.
Next person is Scott Isabel. Scott, are you here? You wish to speak? Please state your name and address for the record. You're okay? All right. Mm-hmm. Do you have written comments? If so, you...
Yes, he did provide the letter.
Oh, okay. Got it. All right, next person on the list. That was for the last
item. That
was the last item. Next person on the list is Mr. Dahlberg. Please state your name and address for the record.
I'm John Dahlberg. I live at 440 McGillbrough Boulevard East in Seattle, Washington, 98112. Would you like me to stand?
You can do whatever you're comfortable. You're fine sitting.
Well, I'll start by standing.
Okay. I'm not timing yet.
I'm the managing member of the LLC that owns the property that's subject to the Tanner Landing overlay, not the junction, so for two separate items. My family has owned this property since the mid-1950s, so we've had a strong interest in the development of the property in the right manner. The property was originally 60 acres. We had an opportunity to sell 40 of those acres to King County for what is now the Tanner Landing Park that adjoins our property and the county right-of-way. That's the reason why all this is happening, because all these natural commodities are in place together. We were approached in 2010 by the city to rezone our property to take advantage of the natural landscape available and to create a gateway to the county park and to the mountains. We were offered at that time a package which involved the upzoning or change of zoning in our property from industrial or employment park to multi-family and some commercial, including a commercial pad in what was to be a city park, and we were to donate 2.5 acres of our property to the city for a park. We were also asked by the city to provide access from the county park to our property and to the city park and ultimately to North Bend Way. We spent some time reviewing this among our family members and decided that in general this was a good thing for everyone, and so we agreed with North Bend to enter into this arrangement with them, or agreement with them, where we would dedicate 2.5 acres as a public park, would provide access from the county park through our property to the city park, and combine all these natural assets together. As a part of that, we were given zoning for multifamily use. That's the MPOD that was passed in 2010. It remained as the MPOD until December of 2016, when an emergency ordinance was passed by the city, not having anything to do with our property, as I understand it, but just a reaction in general to the growth that was taking place in the North Bend area and wanting some time to review it. There was an ordinance passed at that time which substantially downzoned our property in a situation where we thought we had an agreement with the city of North Bend, similar to what would be present in a developer's agreement, where the city and the property owner both have benefits and obligations. To our continuing surprise, the city has approached this as a unilateral matter and have not consulted with us as the other party to the agreement. That's been very disturbing, but nevertheless, we believe in this project, the development, and so we've continued to support it. During this period, we entered into an agreement to sell the property to a local area developer called Shelter, and they're here represented today by Gary and Tia, and perhaps, in response to the December ordinance, and I'm going to use dates instead of numbers, conferred with the city and spent considerable time going through the issues involved and were able to reach an agreement with the city for the development of the property on a somewhat reduced scale from what we had or thought we were receiving in 2010. That was adopted then in an ordinance in February, which approved basically 215 units for the development of the property and incorporated numerous regulations that the city requested at that time. Subsequent to that date in February, on March the 31st, Shelter's application for development approval was granted by the city on March 31st, so as of that date, they had a vested project. There are a whole lot of things taking place and going on, and as you mentioned, and it reminds me of the old Abbott and Costello movies where they always wanted to know who was on first. So, in June, following
what was on second?
The adoption of a favorable plan in February, the county changed, or not the county, the city changed its position in response to some new concerns about growth in the area and passed the June ordinance, which adopted the December 1916 ordinance, which was the very restrictive one. So as of this moment, the June 1917 ordinance, which incorporates the December 2016 ordinance, is the interim ordinance in effect. It's my understanding that the commission has been asked to review the interim ordinance and the alternatives available and make a recommendation to the city council on what will become the permanent regulations. We think, as the property owner, that the appropriate one would be the original ordinance going back to 2010, because that was our agreement with the city of North Bend, and basically we shook hands on that. And at least in the old days when you did that, you had a binding agreement. We're prepared to honor our part of the agreement, but to our dismay, the city has totally ignored the fact that there was agreement and has acted unilaterally. That's one choice. The other choices are February 2017 ordinance, which reflects the agreement that our buyer, Shelter, struck with the city and also now coincides with their vested application, and from a zoning standpoint, I'm told that that's a favorable thing to have the vested application coincide with the ordinance as opposed to having a non-conforming use, which is basically what we have at this moment in time. The third alternative would be to adopt the ordinance that was passed in June, which incorporated the December ordinance, which was very restrictive and basically substantially downzoned the Dalton property. At the June hearing, and I'm not sure if any of you were there, the feeling was that by adopting the more restrictive zone ordinance, which downzoned the property, that no one was really hurt by the downzone because it only affected our property. The thing you need to be aware of is that while we have a great development team that has agreed to purchase the property, they have not waived their contingencies as yet. They're working with the city toward the point where their development will be final. But they could change their mind at any time, and if they did, then our family would be left with a piece of property that has been substantially downzoned, contrary to the agreement that we struck back in 2010 with the city. So I apologize for that lengthy background, but I think it's important that you understand how this originated at the insistence or request of the city and where it's gone in response to what I think or we think is a response to some local things that have happened, some groups of people who have said that they basically just don't want any development and they like our property the way it is with the mules there, which is a relatively recent thing. That would be nice, but it's very expensive to own a piece of property like this with taxes and maintenance. And in addition, there's a sewer assessment that has been passed within the last few years, and we have a $585,000 sewer assessment on our property for the pleasure of hooking up to the sewer, which is important because it makes the development possible. So given these choices, it seems like the middle road, which would be the February ordinance that was passed in 2017, which coincides with the vested application of our buyer of shelter, would be the prudent one to recommend to the council, not the one that's currently the interim regulation, but the one that was the regulation from February of 1917 to June. I keep saying 19, but I think
we got you. 2017, yeah.
2017 to 2018. Yeah. So basically, I just wanted to give you that background and to give you our request, which is that the commission give serious consideration to adopting the middle ground, which is the February 2018 interim ordinance that was in effect from February until June of 2018. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate your comments and all the background. Next person on the list is Inger Brockman.
I'm Inger Brockman. Okay. I'm with Montgomery Purdue, and we represent the Dahlgren family. I reside at 22908 Vashon Highway, Vashon, Washington, 98070. Since Don was so comprehensive in his history, I'm kind of going to go off script a little bit and just point out a couple things that I wanted to clarify in what he was saying, because he's a little kinder in how he reacts to some of this really unfair
changes that came down starting in December, both he and Shelter, who chose to listen and not cast arrows when the December ordinance got passed, worked so collaboratively with the staff and really asked, what is the city's vision? How can we make that happen? Came up with these February refinements, which staff drafted. Shelter helped them mock up, what's this going to look like? How does the December version not really work for anybody? Got this, you know, still a sharp departure from the 2010 overlay, but figured out, okay, how can we make this work? It's 7 years later, let's make this work. Staff presented it, council approved it, as you know, application was made, and then again in June, council sort of unilaterally doesn't even vote on an extension, votes on a wholly different matter, which is to reenact what they did in December, and maybe thought there was no harm, no foul, but there's a lot of things wrong with developing a project that's a non-conforming use, and there's even more wrong with, if that project goes away, leaving the Dahlgrens with a list of broken promises from the city and a piece of property that we've got three different versions of amendments, perhaps a permanent amendment in the works, but not anything like what they agreed to when they worked with the city. And I think there's some confusion by the city. I mean, even looking at all these different ordinances, it's hard to track. Don submitted a letter that I think will help all of you kind of go through what happened, all these procedurally, which different ordinances did what. We want to leave you with, of course, we'd like to go back to the master plan overlay as it was. We understand the realities. There was a lot of work put into the February version. And if you can help get through all the redlining and see the positives of that compromised position in February, and help the council get there, we'd really appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you for your comments. And I'll go ahead and pass out that letter you mentioned to the commission now. Next person on the list is Tia Heim.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Please state your name and address for the record.
Tia Heim with Shelter Holdings, our Cedar River Partners, and our address is 11624 Southeast 5th Street in Bellevue, Washington. We just wanted to be here to articulate our support and agreement with the comments made by Mr. Dahlgren and Ms. Brockman. We request that you recommend adoption of the February version, which is the version that the application is vested to. We recommend that those become permanent. From our perspective, it's not sensible to recommend the December version as permanent for a few reasons. One being what they both described, which was the December one was enacted with no notice as an emergency. Then the February version reflects discussion, analysis, public input, and a lot of thought went into that. And a full council, the approval came out of the full council. In June, when it went back to council for the extension that was needed because it's an interim regulation, it wasn't the full council that was there. It was a smaller group. It was a last minute, let's just go back to December because we liked that better and we think it, and there was public comment saying we think that that results in less units. And so it appeared to be, and that was coupled with the idea that, well, the project is vested anyway. So there was this sort of thought that, well, maybe it doesn't really matter. So I guess we would put it out to you guys that that's not a great way to plan for future development of your city. Don't enact as permanent something because you think it will never be implemented. And then again, as they stated, you know, having a situation where this portion of the zoning code only applies to the Dahlgren property it makes even less sense to go into a situation where you have a non-conforming use before it's even built. So again, that makes you lean towards enacting the February version as permanent. One other benefit that I would point out about the February version is it actually reflects part of the discussion that we had with city staff, which was to increase the size of the park that gets donated to the city substantially. So it goes from a 2.5 acre park to an almost 4 acre park. So that's a significant difference, and I think a significant benefit to the city, and I know that was weighed in the discussions that we had there. So again, we respectfully request that you go with the February version, or at least recommend that to council. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next person on the list is Gary Young. Please state your name and address.
Very brief. Gary Young, founder of Shelter, 11624 Southeast 5th, Suite 210, Bellevue, Washington, 98005. The comments that Tia made are summarized in the letter that I've written, so Mr. Chair, I'll give you that. And briefly just state that as a company, we've worked in our previous building companies in North Denver for a long time. We're very much a part of this community. We spend a great deal of time with Life Enrichment Options, which we helped build their first home for developmentally disabled kids and the residents here in North Bend. We've been working for 5 years now to try to find a home to build the next home. We built three in Issaquah over the last period of years. So we're involved in the community at many levels. I just wanted you to know that we sincerely have nothing but the best intentions for this property. We're very committed. We're very experienced. We've built literally many, many communities throughout the Northwest. And my partner and myself, when it comes to a situation like this, it's quite awkward because there's always going to be some form of financing placed on the property, your permanent financing. And so in today's world, especially after the last recession, bankers are held to the highest level of scrutiny to be sure that when they're approving their loans, everything lines up. And the most important thing they always look for is the land use and permitted uses. And so we have a situation here that's fairly awkward because it's quite complicated, as you can see this package. And when someone looks at it, they go, well, geez, how can there be so much less density allowed than what's built, and how do we go through this process? So 5 years down the road, there's suddenly a problem. And everyone has to kind of go back, and then we'd have to come back through council and probably go through a process like that. So what we're asking is just to try to keep this as simple as possible. I think staff has done a tremendous job. We spent probably over $25,000 and held a special public open house, which is very unusual for a developer to do after we got all our approvals and brought all of our people at every level, the transportation group, the planning, the architect, the open space, so that we could really engage the community and get a lot of good input from the community. And that's something I think that you're all volunteers. You were spending a great deal of time helping the city, and we appreciate that very much. And we approach our developments that way. We want to be part of this incredible community. We have this incredible mountain right here in your back door. And so we are going to work hard to do that. I just wanted you to know that. And we appreciate your support to maybe help us get council to reconsider this.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, is there anyone else who wishes to speak on this issue? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing at 8:10 and move over to Planning Commission questions. And I understand the amount of new material we've gotten, so we'll have ample time to review that, but I came with some questions, but I don't know if you all have some for staff. Please, Mr. Ryan.
Staff or for the speakers?
Either.
When it was agreed that you were going to convey 2.5 acre parcel to the city, was the city going to purchase that property
no, we will donate that property.
But initially, did they make an offer of $25,000 for that property?
Not to my knowledge. The discussions were always the same, that as a part of this overall agreement, we would strike with the city that we would donate the 2.5 acres to the
city. Did you also agree to tear down the property and make the property clean?
Yes, we did.
You offered that, or was that extracted from you?
That was extracted from us, yes. It wasn't our first choice.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I raised the city required the site to come clean without any buildings on. There's two buildings on that site right now. There's cabins.
That's all the park.
The other item that I think is so significant was our willingness to provide access from the county park to the city park and to North Bend Way, because the county has only one access now, which is at the far west end, Mountside Road, I guess it is. And this whole project can't work unless the county can combine with the city public park and have access to North Bend Way. And that's part of the...
When the county brought your property, the 40 acres they bought, was there anything on that property that you had to remove when they bought it?
No.
The request came out at least 60 feet between buildings for a view of the mountain. Was that part of your plan, or was that changed?
I'm going to let... That was new to you, saying,
Well, it's February.
I think came in December in the original interim ordinance.
In other words, as I'm looking over the various letters and the ordinance, I am seeing a great reduction in capacity.
Huge.
Without anything coming back to you for those concessions?
None whatsoever. No, it was, to use your term, extracted from us in the process of trying to move the development forward.
Thank you. There's more questions. I don't know my name. I told them to skip. Go on.
You sure? Mr. Heller?
Clarification here. Mm-hmm. I believe, since there's talk of months and things like that, mm-hmm. is the February version 16.11.8, which being like kind of the middle ground,
yes.
I guess is okay.
Yes, or and that is
16 yet.
I guess
February.
My question is I guess I thought what I read is that the property is vested at the 16. So
correct.
How could 1626 apply?
1626, so interim regulations expire and they have to be readopted. So the 1626 is the latest one that council passed. That is the one that's in effect right now. It's interim. It will expire. That's the one that we have till December to either address, renew.
It would still apply. I guess it's a process thing. I don't understand.
Right.
Either way, because this would be for other properties, 1626.
Mm-hmm. So to kind of clarify, so 1611 came first. 1611A, just a way to help you remember, means amended. So 1611, okay. Then the A is an amended 1611A. So okay. 1611A is the amended version. Then 1626 went back and readopted the original 1611, not the amended version. But in the meantime, Shelter Holdings submitted an application, so they have vested to 1611A. No matter what gets adopted next, they still have a vested application, and once they've vested to those, no matter what this, it provides them some assurance that whatever the city does, they stay vested to that. But so unless they were to, for some reason, the project were not to go through So if the project were to not go through, then whatever is adopted will be what the next project has to vest to. Otherwise, they stay vested to, what's kind of odd, is they stay vested to this code that was only there for a short fraction of time in our code's history. So it's a very, very unique way that it's come about.
I have another question, Mr. Dogger. Mr. Dogger, why would you agree to putting pocket parks in your development when it's a 40-acre park just down the road?
It was one of the requirements of the city. We weren't given a choice.
That's a requirement that we have for every multifamily project, is they have to provide on-site recreation space, 200 square feet per unit.
That's a problem.
And we require that for every multifamily.
Question for staff. So if the amount of units were reduced, wouldn't parkland requirements be reduced?
Yes.
Okay. It just worked opposite for some reason.
Worked opposite.
Yeah, so because more density was allowed in that buildable space. So you went from 1611A had 212 units, 3.87 acres of park, and then 1626 was about 154 units and 2.5 acres of park.
And what's that is in addition to what they're providing on site that's required.
Right.
This is no other multifamily development in the city would be required to do this. It's because there was an agreement reached. They're still providing within their multifamily the on-site required open space requirements. That's the 200 square feet per unit, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. The park is in addition.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. Commissioner Heller, anything else for right now? Commissioner Von Trapp?
I guess the sad story that I'm missing is why these changes were made. Like, it would be nice to have somebody from council come and explain.
Council was requested. They were not unable to.
Okay.
They had prior commitments, and I did it late.
I can't speak for them, but I can say what I saw at the council meeting, and I think it was a reaction to a lot of public comment that came to a council meeting, which is a reaction in whole to the commute, what the growing that the and change that the community is going through today, and I think that's where a lot of the reactions came from.
My turn. Sorry. Could you tell me, when we calculated in our land use map, we had, after the council passed the comprehensive plan, it was 3% in HDR. Was the master plan overlay part of that 3%? Would that be included as part of the 3% of HDR?
Yes,
I think we accounted like 50-50 or something.
Yeah.
And the assumption of it could go either way. It still allows either zoning.
Okay. Now, we have very little employment park space. The Planning Commission at our last meeting approved a change in zoning for HDR, which would allow business uses mm-hmm. and office space in HDR.
Mm-hmm.
If the council approves that, then technically we don't really lose office space, where mm-hmm. we lose manufacturing, mm-hmm. which would be more compatible. I guess on page 33, the first question I have is residential and retail commercial area. West of the minimum 2.5-acre park. I'm not sure exactly how that sites on the lot, but wouldn't we want any retail or commercial? Like, I think of it as a business owner, you would want it facing the street. And if we're going to have a setback of 60 feet, then that could be landscaping and parking for retail. And to me, I don't think we should bury, unless it's a restaurant that you want to have a view of the mountain, we shouldn't bury retail services in a development where you're going to have kids and people walking. They should be out towards a street where there's less traffic through the development, right?
Right. So
page 38.
Since it's not perfectly, since it's at a 45-degree angle, what that's saying is, if you look at the parcel, it has to be to the west of the park that's going to be dedicated, and it's to not break up the park. So this is the property right here,
mm-hmm.
and this is the approximate
approximately this area here is the park. It's saying it has to be on the west side of the park, as opposed to being, say, over here, right in the middle, and breaking up the park property to create the largest park. Does that clear it up?
Well, no, because to me, when I read this, it says residential and retail commercial area, the area west of the minimum 2.5-acre park comprising approximately 60,000 square feet shall be reserved for retail commercial uses and or residential uses. So, yeah, it's both, but I'm just thinking it doesn't preclude them then from doing retail facing North Fenway.
No.
I just think that's a better focus.
It's just not, it's trying to keep the most property intact as possible.
Right.
So it could still be a long North Fenway.
Got it. When we go down to C2, the area shall be dedicated to the city, provided, however, ownership of such restaurant or recreation-oriented uses may be private. So this is parkland that they're dedicating, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
May I comment on that? This happens to be a sore point with me and our family, because part of the original agreement was that this 10,000 square foot restaurant site would be owned by the developer, and more recently in the process, Shelter has had to agree that will be owned by the city and may be operated privately, but there isn't even any guarantee that that will happen. So we went from having a 10,000 square foot site in part of the 2.5 acres to having that taken away with no discussion of any kind, and now it's proposed that be owned by the county and that they would have the control over who operates it. So that's a very significant difference, as you can understand, and it's just an example of the way the city has approached this. Nothing has been said to us. They just did it and used it as a lever to get other concessions from Shelter as the developer.
Thank you.
This doesn't smell good.
Thank you. Sorry, Ms. Commissioner Ryan, I just have a couple other things here. So. On page 34, that's the fourth bullet point down. We say height of any structure located adjacent to North End Way shall not exceed 2 stories of the roof pitch shall be 612. If we're going to have ground floor commercial, then that means only 1 story of residential. Are we trying to get maybe a step back instead of saying only 2 floors? Is that something more that the commission would be open to? So you could say that, you know, your first 2 floors can be in line, and then your 3rd story would be set back 5 or 10 feet. And what that does is it breaks up the facade of it so it's not as imposing facing you. But I think that might be a little more flexible. It's not changing the height limit, but it is giving them some flexibility for more units in that way.
Gary, did I hear you say for commercial on the ground floor?
Yes. Retail commercial.
Retail commercial?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it is mixed use, and then if the council approves our changes, then it should be. So I don't know. We were talking about that along North Bend Way. I think it could apply here. Is that something you could take that language where we were talking
mm-hmm.
about, you know, first putting in a step back facade?
Right. Okay. Because this is specific. Yeah.
That is something that can step back facades for the third can be done.
Further down on page 4, a 60-foot wide view corridor. If we're going to do it, I almost think it might make sense to do it in your office where you have a chance to angle the buildings such a way that they sit in maybe a triangle pattern, so you have a view corridor on either side, but maybe they can still fit in a little more of their building structure. So I don't know how we could word this that might give them some flexibility in citing the, you know, and still you have a view corridor, but, you know, it's all how you're going to orient the buildings to the street view. So do we need to be so strict in here with the wording, or can we take it and have some flexibility, I guess?
Yeah, well, we'd have to think about what's the end goal that you're looking for, and you could, that's a hard one. So if requiring view shed analysis is the end goal, to make sure that you maintain a view from a certain, from one specific spot of Mount Si, is it from one intersection? Where exactly is it that you're looking for the view to be maintained? And I think if you can be very specific with your end goal and intent, then we can be more flexible with the language.
Okay.
But you'd have to, I think you'd have to clarify exactly what it is that your end goal is. You have to be specific on one side, either the end goal or the parameters.
Yes, sir.
Speaking to your question.
Yes.
You know I live on Tanner Road.
Yes.
I did a drive-by with a conscious effort looking at Mount Si. I don't see Mount Si when I get on, off Tanner Road onto North Bend Way and climb just about down to the intersection of 436. I get about a 10-second view of Mount Si. Mm-hmm. What are we preserving? Mm-hmm. What view are we preserving? This is crazy. Are we going to require those trees to remain that's currently on?
Yes, we work with every development. We work really hard, and I know sometimes people don't feel this way, but we do work to preserve the trees. And in this particular instance, this developer's been very agreeable to do everything possible to save them.
So those trees, by themselves, without right. even a building, walk outside.
So that's where I'm saying, for example, one of the things that we've looked at is when you're when you take exit 32 and you're driving down that road, that's one spot where you would be staring straight at the property and Mount Si. So if that's what your goal is, maybe it's when you need to maintain that view. But there's, as Commissioner Ryan pointed out, when you're driving down the road, it's a little, you know, it's a little bit, the view's less, there's a lot of trees there. You're driving, it's actually, I think, and 45 or 50 miles per hour right now.
With all due respect to staff and to the community, there's hardly a point in town you can't go to get a sight of Mount Si, for God's sake. This is not the pristine point to see Mount Si.
The view, though, worst. That is there.
What's that?
There is a unique view that's there, and it's actually a little Si.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's one of the few areas, and when you get to 436, it's gone. Little Si blends in. A lot of times Little Si, you know, you can think, where is that? So I'm not necessarily advocating protecting that, but I'm saying that is what you would protect there. It's an exclusive look at Little Si. It's isolated in that area. In a lot of areas in town, it's not. It just blends with Mount Si, as Mount Si is so.
If you step back to the interchange, you can see Little Si perfectly. It's not like you can't see it anywhere else.
You see it, yeah, in a different way. So whether, you know, with buildings or you'd still see it, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
To have that separation of the mountains to see the side view of it. You know, it started a long time ago with Meadowbrook Farm of preserving a view, right, and buying off that land to preserve it. And we kind of have moved around the mountain of, you know, every angle. So I think there's got to be some balance.
And that's where maybe providing the intent of the end goal would be a useful exercise here, if it's to preserve the unique view of Little Si in a certain spot, or maybe the exit 32 as you're approaching it. That's maybe the, you know, there could be a few different, if you want to change the language there.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I understand that the park part is going to have a lookout tower of some sort.
That's an idea of what could be proposed.
So that would be give you the capacity just to take in that potentially view.
That is one thing that we've been looking at. which would be pretty neat. So actually the park, it's not written in here that the developer has to design or construct the park. This particular developer has agreed to help to pay for the design of the park, working with the city and having a landscape architect design it with the city's planning, which is great, but it still is a city park, and we'll have to buy whatever goes on there and maintain it. So if the city wants to buy a lookout tower and maintain it and take on the liability, that might be something we choose to do, but that has to go through the parks planning process still.
Just to help me along even further, what is the height requirement that you're allowed to build something, a structure like that?
Well, for most of the city, 35 feet is the to the midpoint of the peak roof is the height requirement. And so unless we were to apply for a variance, which you could get a little bit more height, it would be 35 feet.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
If we could only have somebody as a private developer build a tram to the top of Mount Si, the tourism in our city would be. You think about the tourism, though? Yes. Yes. A little coffee shop on top. Brandon. All right. Back to this. So, Commissioner Ryan, did you have a point you wanted to make?
Well, further discussion with staff on these pocket parks, you know, have multiple opportunities for recreational uses.
Commissioner Ryan, as an observer of, kids and parks, I think the parks that work really well have multi-uses, from the PlayStations to the ball fields, and it provides multi-use, so you have one kid doing sports and one kid at the playground. So I think they do serve a purpose. However, the smaller ones, not as much.
This kid never had a pocket park and I survived.
Yes.
That is a conversation we can have when we open up the parks. Mm-hmm. It's a different element.
Yep.
A different chapter.
Okay. I'm on page 36 for my next question, and it is item number 10. For residential developments in a mixed and diversity of multifamily building structures shall be provided, including duplex, triplex, and fourplex. No more than 20% can be a maximum of 10 units. But if I do three stories and I have a fourplex, why isn't it 12 units?
That's the code in the city. We actually, in all of our zones, 10 is the max, and that's a comment we've heard before. And I think we actually took city council recently. Mm-hmm. The other multifamily project that's going through said the same thing.
They requested 12.
And units. City Council, at that point, wanted to keep the cap at 10.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. That's for every HDR zone.
Mm-hmm. And why 20%?
1611A had 40% as you do your comparison to kind of see.
Thank you, Jean.
Just a number. I don't know.
I wasn't there when council decided that, but that was a council discussion.
Okay. For sanity reasons, just for the commissioner and us, we have all these ordinances, but we have one docket of code. Is it easier us for just work in these pages and make changes, or do we want to look at ordinances and how should we bring all this together if
so
we don't have changes?
How I've tried to get up to speed and try to understand everything is, and knowing the comments we were going to receive, so there's been a request to consider 1611A. We have right now 1626, so I went page by page and compared each one, and I made a list of the differences I saw, and I'll probably keep noticing differences. So what is going to be easiest probably is, in my mind, is to pick the one that you're most aligned to, mm-hmm. and we'll get there. We'll deliberate more, and then if there's tweaks you want to make to that one. Because there seems to be different themes and different processes that each of these went to, so if the Planning Commission can say, well, we like this one the best with a few changes, or we like this one the best, so I think is that a good approach?
Yes, Commissioner Ryan.
Which
1611A, February, yes.
Keep in mind, none of these were the 2010 one, so. Right. But the one they're vested to is 1611A.
So, at least on that one, we have the three main parties in agreement. Mm-hmm. At that point.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we're working on.
Okay.
Yeah, when I went through, I tried to just really figure out what changed. How did 1611A change, and what were those elements, and why is that so important or better or not as good, at, and then do the comparison. And then,
is that something that you think would be easier for us to look at ourselves or discuss in a...
I can... For the next meeting, I can put together a summary. Again, I might miss some things. It's going to be my perspective.
Okay.
I'll do my best. No, but I think it would help.
You want us to bring it forward, then that's fine. I just...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Trying to save time.
Right. It's...
Are the red lines that we're looking at, are these red lines for the...
The change from original.
From the change from the February...
From the original code.
2010.
No, this is the December. You're looking at the December red lines, 1611, so the original emergency ordinance. And then what Jamie handed out that also has blue red lines on it is what was adopted in February. Did you get one of these? There you go. Jamie, that's...
But I think the black part that you're seeing... Is from original 2010, what was in the code before the interim regulation.
Yep.
And it's to the one that the potential buyer...
Yep, 1611A. Yes.
1611A, that I just handed you, that has the blue red lines on... The blue red lines. The red and the blue red lines. I know, and I see everyone scratching their foreheads, and I think that this is going to take some absorbing all the information.
So I went through page by page because they do follow each other. You're going to start to see where the changes were made. If you page by page compare, you'll get an understanding for what changes were made.
Yeah. Well, it looks like you noted 1626.
I did make some notes for you. Thank you. I'm learning too. So I will...
Okay. Would anybody like to answer some questions about the Ordinance 1626?
Sure. Try.
So, on page 48, they talk about our diverse housing types and multifamily developments, including duplex, triplex, fourplex, and not simply 10-unit multifamily buildings in order to provide diverse housing options for its residents. And so... Not simply 10-unit multifamily buildings, but you're saying that that's what they want to stick with is 10-unit max?
10-unit max, but they want a variety of not just all 10-unit buildings.
Not just all.
Right.
Okay. And then two down from that, concerned about the lack of workforce and affordable housing stock in the city and is seeking to encourage diversity of housing stock, affordable housing, and unique architectural design. I've beaten this drum. The 3% not sufficient for the city.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a question there. I just think it's funny that it's in there. On page 49, fifth one down, the city council found that vesting of additional permit applications for multifamily structures within the zoning district subject to ordinance number 1611, with the exception of the Hibbs application, without the protection of the interim regulations, would be detrimental to the public health, safety, and welfare. In what way is it detrimental?
I think there's a concern that the infrastructure is needing to catch up before there's more development coming in. But just that there's been such, I would throw out potentially traffic infrastructure is one that we hear a lot.
I agree 100%. The treatment plant needs not only just the one, but it needs to get up to full capacity, right? But I thought that would prohibit development until it was capable capacity.
So I get that there's certain requirements, but I don't think they can develop a property without doing a traffic study and have to mitigate that. Mm-hmm. And by showing how many units, I fail to see the validity of it, and I think it's bullshit. So next, not the one right after that, but on February 7th, 2017, the City Council amended Ordinance 1611 and adopted 1611A to clarify the City Council's land use vision, including setting a maximum density of not more than 212 dwelling units for the entire Tanner Landing overlay and increasing the park size from 2.5 to 3.87 acres. And do we have a description of why the park requirement or additional park requirement was expanded? Is that to create what? I don't know.
Why was it expanded, or
why did it increase?
I believe I don't think either of us were there. I believe it increased. They received additional density where the multifamily development was going to be for a larger park. So it just kind of shifted it into more of a cluster, and then there was a larger park, I believe, was the reasoning behind that.
So is it taking away additional park requirements of the development and putting it into one larger park?
No, they still have to provide the requirements on site. I don't know, Gary, if you want to ask. I know maybe other Gary was there for part of those conversations. If you want to see if they have any clarifying points, I see them looking at each other.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah, better. I mean the park dedication increasing was something that the city wanted in exchange for agreeing to give back some of the density that they had taken away.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
I didn't notice any discussion here about signaling where I've been away and the entrance into the Tanner property. Is that being discussed elsewhere?
Yes. Those are discussed through the site plan review and the traffic's analyzed to see what will be necessary to keep it to the level of service that the city has adopted. At this point, there's not a traffic signal proposed where the entrance of the development onto North Bend Way. There is a roundabout proposed from 436 to North Bend Way. At that intersection, there's a roundabout, but there's no other traffic control proposed that I'm aware of at this time.
I suggest 55 miles an hour is not a good speed to enter into.
And it's been suggested that we lower the speed limit there, as it is in the, some of the hardcore residential areas.
And is it not true that the King County Park and what it's going to be attempted to do is to actually bring additional users of the river into the area?
Correct.
And that's going to bring more riders on the trail in the area, and they're going to be crossing the road. So isn't there some consideration for managing that congregation of people in that speed zone?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What is it?
There's I heard about three bullets points that you hit. One is the high speeds there. We're looking at lowering the speed limits. And there's where the Snoqualmie Valley Trail crosses North Bend Way, mm-hmm. at the kind of funny angle there. We're looking at providing more structured crossing that's safer. And does that mean?
No.
You raise your eyebrows at me. So we've been working with King County to see what treatment they would like to see, since that's their regional trail, what treatment they would like to see the crossing there. And then we're deciding what's the best way to move forward to improve that crossing right now.
Is there an elevated crossing on the list of plans?
That actually did make that is one of the proposals, is an elevated crossing. It's a very expensive fix, so it would be a much longer term feet down the road fix. It's expensive, and then to get high enough, you'd actually have to start it quite a ways out to have the ADA.
But would the developer at site be part of the funding sources? Is that in your mind?
Potentially.
It depends if the developer is creating the need for it, then they can't, the city can require them to provide that.
But the city's insistence has become the recreational park. The city's part of the cabal doing that, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. It really comes down to a legal question. Is there the nexus to require the applicant to provide the fix, or is it already a problem that the city has to? It comes down to a legal question.
This was not touched in this at all. Yeah, this could be part of a big problem.
Right, because it's a different. They're separate. They shouldn't be. It's a separate question. That's a question to be in our parks element. But if same with all, you know, we don't talk about traffic improvements in this either. We don't say where they need to improve traffic. It's all determined through concurrency and SEPA, which say what off-site impacts is this development going to have in the city, and is it the developer's job or responsibility to fix those off-site impacts? Because we can't ask them to fix existing problems in our city. We can only ask them to mitigate for the impact they're creating.
It's not mentioned in here. And all I know about this subject is that when the premium walls were built, I knew the developer was required on the front end to agree to put all the signaling in.
The outlets?
For the outlet mall. So it's part of his plan. Mm-hmm. So it seems like in a very minor way, in a small way, but major to the property owners, is that they're going to be asked at some point in the line to contribute to solving the congestion in that area. When are they going to be given that option?
They are, so through the process, concurrency looks at traffic, and one of the things that they're being required to do is build a roundabout, actually, which is a huge infrastructure project at North Bend Way and 436. They have to look at all the intersections that they would be affected in sending traffic to. They're looking at all of them. There's a couple other intersections that they might have to be providing improvements at as well. So if you want to come into the office and look at the traffic impact, TIA traffic impact analysis that was submitted and what we're proposing and requiring them to do, we could have that conversation.
We're looking at Sagali.
Right.
We're looking at all those projects.
Right, you're right.
Coming down 140.
Yeah.
So there's going to be at least two roundabouts mm-hmm. by the time this project's done. And there's not a mention in this, in even any inference, on the impacts of these developments on North Bendway.
So I think that's a different conversation that if you want to come in the office, we could talk about and go through that. But again,
we never get that option. We never hear about traffic.
We do. We just it's not in this section. It is on our transportation plan.
Yeah.
And currently our Public Works is conducting a study of all the streets in our town. And once they complete that, then we can get that transportation element back. With all that data.
Right. It's city infrastructure. We don't talk about sewer, water, streets, any of that, but it all has to be addressed through development.
To Commissioner Ryan's point, the Cabinet Mine was also required to purchase a traffic light for exit 34 when the need arises that it would be installed. So it is a pretty common thing, I think, is to mm-hmm. have the developer pay for that. So anything left on 1611A or this section?
Just a question on
yes.
the kind of site plan. I see.
Page?
It's a map.
38?
So it's the back of 1611A. Maybe other places. But it shows the connection, which sounds like it's important to go from North Bend Way and into Tanner Landing Park. And so I'm just curious if there's going to be like a bollard there, and it's like King County access, or is the public going to be driving across the Snoqualmie Valley Trail there, and then there's going to be a parking lot in Tanner Landing Park, or there is?
Right, so we've been working with King County to plan this section to make sure the two parks are planned in tandem and act together, and what King County has on their Tanner Landing plan is a river access turnaround there. So you could drive, and they actually have a parking lot on their plan. So that road, it's changed. The access has changed a little bit from what is on this. But that road would go through, and eventually when King County's ready to do their developments, citizens, maintenance, you would be able to drive back there and do a turnaround, and there would be some parking in the back there.
Awesome. Great. Any other questions? So our move forward plan is to look at 1611A and the amendments and changes and come back with our next meeting with what our thoughts are. Okay?
Okay.
Let's move over to our next section, which is, and our next meeting is September 28th.
Whatever, the fourth Thursday of the month?
28th, correct.
Okay, so next item on our agenda is continued discussion of our wireless public facilities.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Could we extend another invitation to council for that?
Yes.
And maybe impress upon them that it would be very important, at least in my mind, to hear the rationale for walking out or changing their minds on the status agreement.
Got it.
That's fine. I agree, yeah.
Yes. Okay. Proposed wireless communication facilities. Miss Hyde.
Thank you. So, we, at your last meeting, made it through the majority of the code and... So the amendments that have been done here were after listening to the conversation, Eileen and I went through, and where we could tighten things up, we did. Where we could remove some things that were really legal jargon, we wanted to make it as readable, user-friendly, staff-friendly. So I think we did a good job. I'm really happy with the amount of stuff that we were able to tighten up after hearing your conversation. Because there was some legal jargon in there that... only one person in this room probably can understand. So what we did, I think that, you know, if you have comments on any of those sections, I'd love to hear them, but I think hopefully you're happy with what you see there. The main, the big changes, the substance that I want you to really focus on is 1870-120, which is prioritized locations, and then the development standards. I'm sure you saw all the changes that were made there, and... hopefully some of them work. I spent some time looking at the images that you had liked and that you didn't like and tried to create standards that got to that visual. The other thing that is in here in the back is a map that tried to, and sorry, this, now that I'm looking at it, it made sense to me one that afternoon, but I think this is kind of a quick map. This is not something we'd include in the code. It's just visually so you can understand. These are the proposals that Gary, Chair Fancher, made about not allowing it on the north side of the road, not allowing it on either side of the road, and this was just visually so we could have that conversation instead of trying to follow. And Gary, I hope I accurately got the spots you were looking at. I actually wasn't 100% sure on some of them, but this is a starting point so we can talk about it and make amendments. I think, you know, we can just start going through and...
Well, first I want to say, Lynn, you did an excellent job, and I agree with your assessment that you were very comprehensive in capturing at least my thoughts and my examples. I tried hard to find something to disagree with, and it's rare that I come up empty. So.
I'm sure you've got stuff. So, well, thank you. I appreciate that. This is a tricky one. This is a tough code to work on. So, thanks for everyone's attention.
It's only tricky. I wonder why we're even doing it. It really requires more of a technical opinion. You know, we're sitting here basically just trying to figure these things out.
No, you've been doing great.
And I've learned a heck of a lot.
And you're doing great.
Found out today what a dome was.
I know, I've had to Google so many things.
Yes.
I got a picture of it. It's in the dome. It's a small one. Yeah. But the one we most seem more likely is on boats.
Mm-hmm. The solid.
Thanks for bringing that.
You see this?
Yep.
On a boat, that's a radome. Mm-hmm. It collects data. Yeah. But so I'm glad I was forced into reading this. But as I read this, I said to myself, why are we having some technical people sitting beside us to help us? Because I'm just guessing all this stuff, just flat out guessing. I don't feel like I've done anything productive. Fortunately.
Well, I think that you guys are doing a great job, and you become professionals at everything. And Eileen is covering the legal aspects, and after, you know, I think we're doing a pretty good job. I feel good about this after our last meeting. With the changes that have been made based on looking at other cities and And also some of that, those links that I sent out had a lot of useful information.
Well, so I'm looking at the zoning map, and I'm thinking of wireless coverage for a cell phone and for internet access or what do you call it? Yeah.
Wi-Fi.
Yes. So you think about it from, is there any pocket in the city? And I think there's options for poles in all these other different parts. You guys, you know, if you disagree with me, then that's fine. But I feel pretty comfortable that our main street and all our key access points shouldn't be used in this way. And I feel pretty strongly about that as far as the monopoles go.
So this, these red dots and dashes are indicating areas where
I'm saying no.
Prohibiting. Okay.
So there's two different things that are happening. And this is Gary. I want you to confirm that I got this right. So the dots were where you had said not on the north side of the road because you wanted to those were where you thought it was important to preserve views of Mount Si. The dashed is north and south or either side, east and west. So the only along North Bend Way where it's dots was it just the north side. And then the dashed lines was where it was both sides. And that's where I thought for me it helped to put this, I didn't make a key, I'm sorry, it's kind of a last minute thing to pull that together, but is that right? Did I get those mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I think so, because I did North Bend Way from Bendigo to Southeast North Bend Way and Southeast 140th. Yep. Yeah, because I think about all that industrial area that we've got there. And that's a perfect place for it. On the, what is that, the south side?
On the east side of
yeah.
town.
Mm-hmm. And then we've got the pink.
And also in the language that I put in here, and this was trying to guess what or trying to remember, I just said in the rights of way along the roads there. Mm-hmm. So it could, or rooftops. So it would be the adjacent parcels on the rooftops or the utility poles within the rights of ways. If it was a parcel back, then it could start to have it again. So it's just right along the road.
Yep. Yep. Because then you've got some buffer and some trees that help camouflage it. But it is my request of staff, whatever covers our utility pole designs and standards that you put it on our agenda. If we can have any influence on our current utility poles, I'd love to discuss
that. What do you
want
to talk about?
I want to talk about how many wires can be allowed on one pole and how many strands can be separated and the look of them and how many boxes can be hanging off and diodes or whatever those things, you know.
I'll add on this picture.
Yes. Yeah, I want to challenge our utilities to justify that they need three boxes on every poles for eight poles in a row. I don't see how that's. I don't know. I see that they just kind of add things and they never remove. That's all. I think we can do better, especially when we're looking at Mount Si.
And Chair, I'd caution you that it's
the end of Jesus.
They're not always going to be separate. You might see attachments on either the poles or the wires that could be related to wireless facilities or Wi-Fi. So
so are you saying along the wire in between the poles, you'll have something?
Indeed.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
you'll
guessing,
have to forgive me. I'm fresh out of a conference, the National Association of Telecom Officers and Advisors was here in Seattle the last 4 days, so I drove in straight from that. We got to tour a T-Mobile cellular site, a macro site, a tower in West Seattle near the port. It was a 100-foot tower. It was fascinating. Yeah, it was fascinating. It was interesting to get the scale.
Mm-hmm.
You had the distribution lines, the electric distribution lines, right there in comparison, and that was about a third of the way up. It was a 100-foot tower, and that's actually a shorter macro site than is typical, which is normally 110 to 140 feet. So
been geeking out on this.
Yeah,
I'm,
and
I'm
so can you describe like what the pole was like, or how it was angled, or what was at the top, or how it was done throughout?
Sure, and hopefully I have. I wish I had a chance to get this to you guys ahead of time. It was a model pole. It's roundish. It was, I think they said, 46 inches in diameter at the bottom. It's on what they call a pad, which was an enclosure, and they had, they had like their battery backup. They had a generator and electrical equipment.
Are they down inside on the ground, or are they on the pole?
That's on the ground. On the pole, they had antennas, and then they had, there was something else behind and directly underneath the antenna. There were about three or four on that particular pole. There was something underneath it, I think they called it an RNA, to boost the signal. So it was interesting to look at that. And then, two, I came away with a better understanding of how the macrocytes interface with the small cells and with the distributed antenna. Is typically when you're talking macrocytes, you're talking increasing coverage, as opposed to if you're doing a small cell or a distributed antenna, that's to increase capacity. So if you're going to a place where you've never been before, you'd have to put up the big tower. Mm-hmm. If you're looking to just boost the signal that's already there to, say, accommodate new development, more people, more dense, like a mixed use or something like that, that's where you would use the small cell for the distributed antenna.
Would these... Nice. Would these be used in a temporary situation? So if we ever bring back, what was that mud fest we did at site? No, the Warrior Dash.
Mm.
Yeah, where we had, I don't know, how many, over 10,000 people at once, come in North Bend. So that would have been a great opportunity to spin up.
Well, those are cows. Cells on wheels, so
okay.
There are temporary
cows.
Yeah, so there are.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, so there's temporary cell facilities that they can bring in, and it really it wouldn't be. I imagined like a mini pole on wheels that you cart in, but it's not as exciting. It's a truck.
Kind of like a TV truck with a satellite dish. Okay.
It's a cow.
Yeah, interesting. Well, it's great that they plan for those things.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
I honestly, just back to the dots and the dashes, please look heavily at this. As we all rely on our phones and many people don't have a landline, it is really important for connectivity and don't want to be too restrictive, but want to be thoughtful in how we allow it throughout our city.
Right, and on that note, things coming to mind, like the standard range of those monopoles or boosters, and so... I guess a point that I was trying to make last time when we eliminated it from residential and being surrounded by county is, are we going to push them outside city limits, therefore not conforming, as opposed to, and so making sure that we're going to provide the necessary coverage. And I would imagine 4G is just a stepping stone to something more powerful, for talk of it, and so what does that mean? Is the range of those things, and so wanting to keep that in mind as we plan.
Commissioner Von Trapp, oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner. I may have some info that
yeah.
may speak
yeah,
to that.
Please.
So we did ask how for the macro sites, how far apart do you need them? And it turns out it depends on whether you are in an urban. Environment, a suburban environment, or a rural environment. I suspect North Bend would be considered suburban at this point, or potentially past rural, but now probably suburban. And at that point, you'd need them about every 2 miles. In an urban environment, it's about every half mile. And then I believe it's out to 10 miles in a rural environment.
And so that would be like a circular radius?
That's my understanding, yeah.
So if we had three in our city.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I did that's call the one of the
good question
providers that keeps checking in with me to see how things are going and ask what facility they were looking at. And he said they they weren't sure yet. They were waiting for this to be done to see what was possible, but monopoles is what they were likely interested in. So it sounds like that is a possibility that it's coming this way,
and so
or the interest is coming this way.
On that topic, then, if they want to do a monopole, would they come in, replace the existing utility pole with one that would accommodate their use, or would they just install it site wherever they wanted to?
I think it's a new pole. It's not replacing. That would be co-locating a microcell or something, but a monopole would be a totally new.
They'd either have to have an easement or rent space from somebody.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, and you might even see a request in your right-of-way. This is a new trend. Typically, cell towers have been sited on private property, but they're increasingly wanting to go into the right-of-way. And we heard extensively from industry at this conference, and that is definitely the direction that they're headed in. So.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Question for you.
Yes.
Looking at page 70. Term existing site feature should use twice when it comes to siting display facility. And my question to you is existing features might be a tree, might be something that can be removed at some point. Is the owner of that existing feature required to leave that in place, or is there an easement purchased to protect that site from being changed?
5A and B. Right, you're talking about 5A and B.
5A and B.
Okay.
I mean, it depends on essentially the development standards that you have. I mean, there's going to be a fence around, if you're going to have a standard macro set, you're going to have a fence off around just because it's almost like a substation, like a mini substation where you're trying to fence in.
These are intended to be features that confuse the view. You're not supposed to really see this thing, but it's there. And I'm just saying, if the provider has found a feature on private property on a hill somewhere, and this satisfies the existing features that they're looking for, do they have to acquire that existing features to protect it, or if the owner can the owner just remove it, then what happens?
That's a good question.
I think you need a C there that says if the existing site feature that was doing that has been removed, then it would be up to that provider to replace it or come up with a suitable solution.
And if I was a provider, I'd like to make sure that doesn't happen. So would I have to buy an easement or actually buy a chunk of that land?
Yeah,
or what if they come in and through their development and digging the hole and heavy trucks, they damage the root structure and everything dies around them. So, you know, I think it's...
Yeah, I mean...
it's worthy to put something in there.
I would draw your attention to its proposed North Bend Municipal Code 18.78.100 requirements for all WCFs, and it's subsection B, and it says permittees shall maintain the WCF in a state of good repair and to maintain or replace if necessary vegetation and landscaping required as a condition of approving the permit. This section is essentially like minimum standards for WCFs, so and they would run with the facility. And so if they were to pull down the tree, code enforcement could go cite them. And that was the intent of this.
Cite the private owner or cite
them? It would be the facility.
Yeah.
But I see what you're saying. You're worried about a loophole where the private owner...
isn't compensated. He's just being used. His feature is being used. What does the installer do to protect that? Does he pay the owner for the right to use that? Does he buy an easement? Does he? He doesn't have condemnation rights, so.
No. He'd have to purchase. I mean, I think at that point they would need to purchase a larger portion than just what they need for the pad in order to be able to protect those assets. Because I think you're right.
So
otherwise,
I just wonder. So this is in a code that we have no solution for. So it's hard for us to actually.
Yeah, because you would cite the operator as opposed to the landowner who actually owned the property.
More simple.
Is it in the box? No, I'm just going to pass around my version.
Yeah.
We could add something here, and it doesn't hurt to have it in there multiple times, because it's really about, is staff's attention drawn to it, because otherwise you have to know to go look in a different part of the code. So you could add something here that says, whether it's a condition of the permit, or I don't know if you actually want to record something on title, that requires it to maintain whatever you're using as the existing site feature that's screening it. So the screen must remain, and if it's removed, then you have to replace it with an equal or greater screen.
I say the landowner should resolve any responsibility that is made whole if something happens to the existing feature.
Right.
That's what I would say.
So you're I see what you're saying. You're concerned that the landowner is going to be somehow not penalized, but something's going to happen.
Yeah, but one tenant goes, okay, all of a sudden maybe second or third appear because it's a good existing feature.
On a separate parcel that's not that landowner.
I'm just saying there should be something in this additional language that protects the landowner. If she's being asked to use their existing feature to help facilitate this connection, they should be compensated at the minimum when the feature is not being used, or when it's being abandoned, it's removed at the expense of the developer.
So if it's going on to their property, they are compensated. If it's not going on to their property and it's going on adjacent property, then obviously they're not compensated.
That's what I'm saying, the existing feature.
So the question, I guess, for staff is, would an acceptable screen for a pole be the vegetation or trees on offsite of that location? And so if we do allow that, then I think that the point is valid that we address it in some way to say that if the screen is not owned by the utility, then it would be up to the utility to install the screen if it was removed.
And the owner could remove it if he wants to.
Right. And so it's fine that you use it, but if the owner takes it down, you do have to put one up. We need something like that. Because I think that would happen, right?
I think you require them to screen it on site and not use it an adjacent. I think it has to be on site, personally.
On site.
I think the screening needs to be on the same parcel that the facility is on, and not using the neighbor's facility.
Yeah, I think that's what this says. This is an existing facility, where they're going to site this feature. And it's not publicly owned, it's privately owned. I don't see anything in this text that protects the private landowner. They just decide to take that tree down as they want, but they're tired of looking at it. And they say, well, you can't do that. I've got this facility here.
But what Lynn's saying is that you're going to require it be on their own property.
Right.
So that doesn't matter.
So it's going to be in a right of way or something.
They have to have their own screen.
Okay.
And I think we need to tighten the line. I don't think the code says that as drafted.
No, I think that would be we would need to be added that it has to be provided on site and not in adjacent properties. I'm trying to make sure that we're getting at what your concern is, and I'm not sure if we are.
We're not there. I'm just saying this is a perfect site to put a pole.
Sure.
And it's in somebody's field.
Mm-hmm.
And a tree is out there that provides a good existing feature. It provides a good shield for this pole.
Mm-hmm.
So they go put the pole there with the landowner's permission.
Right. They get an agreement with the landowner. Yeah. They get compensated. The landowner will be compensated.
The landowner is not obligated to keep that tree there. He's given the permission to use it, but he's not saying I'm never going to remove my tree.
Well, I think at this point we just said you have to keep the tree there.
And
if you're getting compensated for it, you have to keep the
tree. By that provider getting an agreement with the owner, they would probably, if that's the city code, require that to be.
It would be an easement then, because the permit is terminable. It would have to be an easement. So you're answering my question.
Okay.
That you'd have to get an easement from a landowner to use that existing condition. Somewhere that should be said. So a landowner can object. You know, you can't condemn the site. If he agrees to put it there, he wants an easement to protect himself.
Well, he's going to be getting paid for it to be located there.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people go looking for this.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that what's the right legal way that this happens. Is it through an easement or?
Well, no. I mean, no. It's a lease. It's a straight lease, and it can be. You know,
know, and I've only ever seen them between cities and wireless providers, but it's a straight lease. Because I think what you're thinking of is something like a conservation easement. But I've never seen one of those in connection with the lease. Because that's the thing, is you have the two different relationships here. Is the city is regulating where and how these wireless facilities are sited and what protection is going to make them look not as horrible. But then there's also the relationship, the landlord-tenant relationship between the private landowner, should the facility be located on a private property, and the wireless facility provider. And I just don't see that those two necessarily overlap. I don't think that the code, unless you're going to require the wireless facility owner to screen on their property the way Lynn was describing, I'm not sure that the code can get at that.
That's what this is. This will be an existing feature as the screen. I'm just saying that if the landowner wanted to bail out on this agreement, mm-hmm. they should be allowed to, and not somehow forced to remain in an agreement that they no longer want to have.
Yeah, it's whatever contract they have with the utility provider. The city doesn't enter into the mm-hmm. private contract. That's, we don't provide legal advice for citizens. We don't enter into that private contract. That's,
if I'm a citizen reading what the city's agreeing to, I want to know that I have a right to terminate a contract. So you should say there somewhere.
We mm-hmm. don't, but we're not saying you have a right to terminate the contract. If they, we don't provide that loophole for them.
No, I mean, what would happen is code enforcement would go out and cite the wireless facilities mm-hmm. operator and say, look, you are required to have vegetation and landscaping of X, Y, or Z. That's not here. You fix it. And then they have to figure out how to fix it. They have to either strike up a site deal with the landowner, deal with getting fined by the city, or whatever tools code enforcement has in their bag, or worse come to worse, and I've never heard of this happening. Say, fine, we're going to have to relocate this facility elsewhere.
What if there was just a provision that says it should, and Arlene, let me know if we do this, just it should be the utility provider's responsibility to ensure the adequate screening is maintained mm-hmm. or remains in place, is either maintained or replaced as necessary. Because there is also the fact that a tree could
die.
And so it could be the utilities provider's responsibility to ensure that equal or better screening is provided or is maintained.
And another thing just to keep in mind is, and I know we're talking about trees, and it's not necessarily always going to be trees, but as far as the macro sites go, they do have to have a line of sight, so they're always going to be taller than your trees. Your trees will interfere with them.
So kind of on that note, and I hear what you're saying, Dick, looking at 18.7.120, taking into consideration the current standard range is 2 miles, looking at the map and the practical location, considering the first three options, and that they probably have established approaches for dealing with these things. I'm wondering if we're talking about something that might happen once in the next 150 years, as opposed to maybe focusing on how do we locate these things in the place that we want them. Like, for example, co-location and in drawing them in rather than. This conversation. How do we concentrate them out at Trucktown? How do we concentrate them on, the lighting or poles near? I think a lot of that's in here.
Right.
Is there anything that we can make more attractive for that by limiting them to maybe just the first three? Because we have those in 6 miles of our town.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got the outlet mall, you've got the EP1 zone on the west side of town, and then you've got
buildings in the middle of town.
Yeah, you got City Hall, right. New City Hall location, or Public Works, and then you've got all the blue neighborhood business, and then you've got industrial zone
out on the east side of town and the mm-hmm. neighborhood business, and then you go to Employment Park area there right behind Truck Town. So
I like your approach, though. Instead of talking about where do we not want to see them, where do we want to see them, and does our code get to that point?
Does it make it easy for them to know where to go?
So, I mean, they're going to take the path of least resistance, right? I mean, that's what any business does.
So if that helps the way I said it.
Maybe we write it down on the board and just make sure we got all of them.
So,
I don't know what's going on back here.
Outlet Mall and Safeway Shopping Center.
Okay, let me erase them, then we can grab them. Maybe.
A lot of work. Penalty of do not erase.
Just close your eyes.
All right. We'll do it right in here. Okay, where do you want them?
Okay. Outlet Mall and Safeway.
Okay.
EP1 zone on the west side of town.
Just the west side?
No, I'm not done yet.
Oh.
I'm being very specific.
Okay.
You can
figure out. You didn't see the whole number of the black seems to show up for me anyways.
We said businesses downtown.
Okay.
So those would be behind the facades or rooftop, right?
Center rooftops.
Some would be on poles, right?
Could be on.
Businesses downtown, but not on.
There's
not the ones fronting. North
there's
Bend
light poles right. By North Bend Elementary and by QFC, or QFC. We could say QFC area.
Right. Yeah, but we already did do the not along North Bend Way, so it could be in the downtown, but not right along.
Well, it could be on QFC's rooftop,
right? Yep.
That's not on the street, so in the post office.
But so that is a point that we should go back to and say, if it's a parcel that's adjacent to North Bend Way, but the facility is set back X number of feet, then it's okay, because QFC is actually in a parcel adjacent to North Bend Way, but so then we need to look at.
If it's easier to say my restriction is no monopoles or co-location in those routes, they would have to be rooftop.
Co-location on existing utilities?
Yeah.
Okay.
They would have to be rooftop or on a different street, is what my intent was.
Let's work on the language to make sure we got that.
Does that make sense, everybody? So I'm saying, yeah, if you do a rooftop and a facade, it's fine because then you're more screened.
Mm-hmm.
But if it was on the North Bend Way, when you're looking at Mount Si and you had more of this cluster, which I can share pictures with you guys if you want. To me, that just, it seems like the opposite way I would like us to go, from undergrounding utilities and getting a clear view wherever we can, and good photo spots that we can encourage tourists to visit.
At the same time, I think it depends what we're talking about. I mean, if we're talking about a monopole, I think it makes sense. In some of the micro cells.
Right.
I mean, those pictures, you can even see them.
Yeah, right, yeah, so. They're on the side of buildings.
Right.
So I'm specifically monopoles. Co-location on our pole.
That's funny. Sorry. So this is nighttime. Thanks, Jamie.
That's some toilet paper.
We're getting there. Okay. School's just starting. All right. Thanks, Jamie. All right. Are we still going?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
It's helpful to talk this out.
No, I agree. I think this is really important.
We don't
want to
be too restrictive or unclear. And yeah, because if you were on the side of a building in QFC with a microcell, right, wouldn't that be fine? It would be.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm specifically thinking is monopoles and the co-location where you're trying to take one of our poles that are 60 feet and make it 100 feet and put the things on.
So these are monopoles or co-location? Locations?
Yeah.
Okay.
These are in. Yeah.
Where they'd be allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Or anything.
Okay.
Anything. Is
anything,
allowed.
But.
These are our preferred locations.
Okay. All right.
So, everybody chime in if you
keep going.
So, okay, so we got QFC.
Yep. I'll move the list over here. Okay.
Let's see. We have. What's the park there?
Torgerson?
Torgerson Park.
Yeah.
We could do it on our new bathrooms. We could do it on our new whatever cooking facility and whatever is being built. The post office, yeah. Any of the backsides of the businesses in the neighborhood business zone along North Benway or on the rooftops?
So, backside of businesses in B zone.
Mm-hmm. Or on rooftop.
And this is in B zone along North Benway?
Yes.
Okay.
By Mountside Boulevard, those surrounding.
By Mountside Boulevard, those NB zones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it would be all NB zones.
Okay.
Really. Okay. So then you have the industrial and overlay zones, and we said no residential. If you have mixed use, where are we on that?
I would say yes.
Thoughts from other people?
I think here's why yes. Because if you have an office situation or you have a gathering of workers, you're going to intensify the number of users, and it would demand then the better service.
The mixed use could be...
Close your mouth.
Yeah.
Like what you're saying, but close your mouth.
Could be retail or office on the bottom floor, but it could be residential above. So are you okay with something attached to... where residential units are?
Microcell or on the rooftop in the facade, I'd be okay. What does the commission think?
Based on the pictures that I saw last week, I would be fine with the microcell just about anywhere in the city.
If you can get stealth, you have to mandate.
But, and that's where, right. So we're working on locations right now, and then we can go to development codes, I think, is... Cool. Because a lot of the development codes in here are actually really strong for those where they have to be set back. If they're on top of the roof, they have to be set back the same height that the facility is. So if it's 6 feet tall, it has to be set back 6 feet from the front of the building. The ones that are on the facade, I think I might have even added that they can't go above the roof. They can't be mounted greater than, they can't stick out. So they have to blend in. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I missed that last one. What did we decide there?
The industrial and overlay zones. We were talking about microcells are a yes. What about rooftop? You're going to have a 35-foot structure. What is a rooftop? How high would they go above the rooftop? Would they want to reach 110 feet?
No, so, look at what I...
Oh, you think it's small...
Would they just be like tagged onto the side of the building like that one in Bellevue?
Well, that's a micro. Yeah. I'm saying if you have a rooftop structure, how high do they want it, or how high do we allow it to go?
Let's look at what I said. Because
yes.
I think I added this in there. Antennas on a building. That's what this would fall under. So roof-mounted antennas must be set back from the edge of the roof a distance equal to 100% of antenna height.
Okay, so if I had 60 feet, I'd have to have a pretty big building.
But then I think at the beginning I said all wireless communication facilities. I think I did a height limit for all of them unless otherwise. Okay, so I said shall not exceed 15 feet above the top of the support structure unless otherwise specified below. So that's for every facility is not to be greater than 15 feet unless we specifically say this one can be, like monopoles, for example. There's a specific height allowance on that. I think that's the only one that goes greater than 15 feet, if I remember. There's some that went smaller, like on top of a light pole or an athletic field pole. There were some that were smaller, but 15 feet was on top, and that would be above the height of the structure. So if you allow 35 feet already and then go 15 feet higher, you'd be at 50.
So on top of Ace Hardware, there'd be another extra 15 feet.
There potentially could. Let's see. So Ace Hardware, yeah, that's a good example. So Ace Hardware is in our DC zone, the commercial zone. It would have to be 15 feet back from the facade. But yes, there could be.
And
and just a warning, I know I told y'all this last time, but this is, there's so much here. Just bear in mind that once you have something, it can get bigger, it can get fatter, it can get taller, and it, as long as it falls within certain parameters, it'll become what's called an eligible facilities modification request. That's that sister ordinance we didn't get to last time on that. But just bear in mind that if you decide 15 feet is the limit, it could be higher than that in time.
That's the starting point.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So what you see may not be what you get.
Yes.
So that's a loophole
yes.
that we'll have to look to limit. Or
yeah.
It's so a federal loophole that I think we only have so much ability to limit.
So
yeah.
then do we want to say industrial and overlay zone on the south side of North Bend Way? Because if it can go up higher and fatter, then we mess up. If we're going to have a developer have 30 or 60 feet between buildings to protect a view, do we want to have a big fat antenna on the top?
How about the sewage treatment plant?
Yes.
That's a good spot.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that is prioritized here with
public
facilities.
Masonware across off Torgerson.
What's that?
Masonware across off Torgerson.
I just think it's such a central place in town and good service for
the
mountain.
I thought that too until I heard about this loophole that can, and it's on the north side, and the view from there is steep.
Okay. Scratch it.
Okay. You could have it right adjacent at the gas station, or, you know, I think you could find something
mm-hmm.
really near it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so right now what is allowed, what we did in here was allowed, and we talked about parks at the last meeting, and we didn't come to a conclusion, but what I said in here was... I said WCS wireless communication facilities are prohibited at all parks except where there are existing light poles. And then if you go to the development standards, there's a specific development standard for athletic field lights. I said that it has to be mounted as close as possible to the pole. It shall not exceed above the lights. So that was one of the things I know we were concerned about was going up higher than the lights. And then also... all the cables and conduit have to be routed through the lights, so you can't have the cables going out. So I'm happy to cross that off if you want it, but just so you know.
There are not going to be any lights out the fields either.
At Torgerson.
Right.
Okay. I'm fine with that.
So cross off Torgerson?
Yeah, but keep your lighted.
Okay.
Work.
Yeah.
So you'd still consider them on the athletic.
Yeah.
Lights.
What we're doing is the preferred list, so that's why.
Okay. All right, I'm happy to cross it off, just so we're all on the same page.
Have you got the building shop and those that cluster of groups out there by the... what am I talking about?
Oh,
Encompass.
Yeah?
Let's see, so right...
It's hard to pick a preferred there. I mean, you could say that complex.
Kind of in my mind, what we're doing right now is these are the where you'd allow them, and then we're going to make sure that our code supports them and would guide people to here.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not going to go through and say every QFC, Safeway, these are the business. We're just going to make sure that our code is working with what you have in mind. We're kind of like ground truthing.
I'm saying it's easy for us. You can be more exact with locations and
mm-hmm.
setbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And
right. So the Encompass, or let's see, Encompass is neighborhood business zone. And
you could do it on the Mount Si sports
mm-hmm.
facility,
mm-hmm.
that big building. It's huge.
Yeah.
And it's
got a separator overlay.
Yeah.
Yep. So right now we don't preclude them in that.
Mm-hmm.
So we can, I'll add that to the list, and right now that does work.
UFOD?
So,
maybe?
Yeah.
We can bypass Meadowbrook completely.
Yeah.
That's parks.
Right now, it would the way our code's written, it would be allowed at Meadowbrook if there's an existing light, like athletic light out there. So it would be allowed there right now, the way it's written. If you want to take it out of there, we can look at which.
All depends if we're going to do lighting for the disc golf course.
I don't think you're going to see lights there.
No.
All our parks close at dusk, so the not this could change. This very much could change. But the message we've always gotten is we don't want to light them because they close at dusk, and we also like our dark sky, so we don't want to have everything lit up.
Okay.
At all our parks.
About the old hospital site, that's the last snow
cone. Mm-hmm. Send a new snow cone.
Industrial overlay zone, I would say on the south side of the street.
For industrial or for overlay zones?
Both. It's this section right
here. Container landing.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So when I hear industrial, I think of all employment zones. And when I hear overlays, I think of every overlay.
Yeah, sorry. The Tanner Junction MPOD is permitted.
Okay.
Lynn's tough.
Well, I know who's going to get blamed when a monopole comes into the city. Yeah. They say, why'd you do that?
Why doesn't Lynn work for us anymore?
Well, you got great cell phone service, though, don't you?
Yeah.
You got a better job at T-Mobile.
Yeah.
I'm saying EP2. Does everybody agree? EP2 on the east side of town? And the IC zones?
Okay, so right now the EP2 would be allowed except for along North Bend Way.
Yes.
Okay. So.
But I'm sure in that big 40-60
acres. Yeah, yeah, they'll find.
You already have EP2? EP2.
Yeah.
Well, it's a question. So we've done EP1 west side of town, EP1 at Tanner Junction, master plan overlay. Is there any EP1s that you would not want to see it in? We just said yes to EP2.
EP1 in the Tanner Landing master plan overlay, which is on the north side of North Bend Way.
So you wouldn't want to see it in any part of it, or just...
I would only want to see microcells, not monopoles or rooftop.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That
in any of it, or just adjacent to the road? Because right now what we've talked about is just adjacent to North Bend Way, but maybe if it were...
Well, your comment of if these things can grow, you wouldn't want to see it, and so that's where I'm going on the premise that this isn't acceptable to the commission, is because if you had that on the north side of North Bend Way, you're looking at Mount Si from that view, and all of a sudden you've got 15 or 30 feet of this 10-foot-wide treed structure with all these, you know, because that was the high building on that side of town to do it on.
Again,
making the attraction out there, truck towns.
200 feet.
Right,
yeah.
Something out there. So.
Well, that's what I'm saying. All EP2 and IC zone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's covered.
In IMU, it would be allowed there as well. The blue.
But that's just that big, exit 31.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right. We weren't talking about exit 31 too. Oh, sorry. Exit 32.
He said truck down. Yeah. Okay, anywhere else you guys think we should add to
this
list?
So I'm
going to
say EP1 except Tanner Landing.
Yes.
How does that sound?
Tanner Landing, yes. Excluding Tanner Landing, MPOD.
Okay.
That's a pretty big list of yeses. That's a lot better than our noes, right? We equaled it out. Yeah.
We're positive. That's positive thinking there.
Yes, here's what you can do at the park.
Mm-hmm. I heard EP1 excluding this.
Is our focus area.
Wanted to exclude this, correct?
So right now what it says is adjacent to North Bend Way on the north side, that would be where you just pointed, all of that on the north side. Either, right now though it's written that just the adjacent parcel, so whatever parcel's touching the north side of North Bend Way, you may want to consider just having a certain feet from North Bend Way, because there are some parcels in the EP2 that touch North Bend Way and go all the way up to 140th. So they're really, yep, they go all the way up. So all of those would be excluded. And if that's where you want to focus on sending them, you might want to have a distance back from North Bend Way that they could be.
I'm sorry.
What I was proposing was EP1 on the north side.
Prohibited or allowed?
For monopoles.
Prohibited.
No, monopoles.
Prohibited.
Okay.
Right? I mean, because that's, I mean, mm-hmm. all of that is the view that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then trying to concentrate and attract them down here, or I guess even here. And, yeah. I mean, how far is this? 3 miles?
Sure. Not even, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Right?
Maybe. Yeah. As the crow flies, maybe less. So, it sounds like along North Bend Way in the NB zone and EP1 zone is what I just heard. No monopoles would be allowed.
On the north side.
On the north side. So, the way that this is written right now, they also would not be allowed in the DC zone. On the north side.
Mm-hmm.
So the only, that would leave the EP2 that you would allow them on the north side. Is that what you're recommending?
That's on North Bend Way. There's still 2nd, 3rd, and 4th Avenue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just trying to clarify. I'm not trying to say one thing's good or bad. Just
okay.
Clarifying what I heard.
Do have something that I
can. Okay. So what do you think about that, allowing them in the EP2 zone along North Bend Way?
Yes, I think that's an error in my
okay, request. Error in my, okay, so.
We want to, because that goes right along I-92.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
So where is that?
So essentially these could end up in an open space.
Mm-hmm. Monopoles.
Not in a city-owned open space.
Okay.
Yeah, Gary, you have from 140th to 468th. Yeah, and I agree that's a good stretch of property.
140th to 168th. Oh, so that would be on the, not North Bend Way, it would be on the other side of it.
Okay. So... So
those dots, yeah,
should go up there. Okay.
Along the back side of the industrial.
140 is pretty heavily timbered on both sides of the right of way.
Yeah.
But there are some street lights and poles.
So I'd recommend the same thing, is that we have parcels that you might want to give a certain distance it needs to be set back, because almost all the, no. Yeah, the majority of those parcels, the ZP2 parcels, touch both North Bend Way and 140th.
So just to be clear, my request is to remove the dots from mm-hmm. 140th all the way to, what is exit?
468.
468.
As a preferred yeah. location, yeah.
But then you want to put the dots right here.
Yes.
So again.
With a setback of.
There we go.
40 feet. Minimum 30. Well, 40 feet is the TLA.
The transitional landscape area out there is 40 feet. 40
feet minimum.
So you've got 40 feet. Two-pole school on your list there.
It's outside of the city limits.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I like this list. I think this is good.
Yeah.
In my mind, and I don't know if this is conventional, but to put preference given to three locations spaced out at these equidistant ranges.
Mm-hmm.
Second priority, these locations. Third priority,
mm-hmm.
is that?
Yeah. I don't know how how much you can pinpoint it.
Yeah.
That's what's hard.
It's gonna go on where they want their signature.
Buildings, but
right.
these areas, these.
Or
zones. A narrative, just that these are, because if I think it is good to, if we give areas where they can't be, then mm-hmm. it's areas where they can, but it, I don't know if we...
pinpointing it.
What about public works and New City Hall?
Mm-hmm. I can add those. So, right now, so the prioritized, it's not a map, it's not specific parcels. The Co-location, we'll skip that. The first one is public buildings and structures located in non-residential zones. So that would be public works and city hall. All right, so that would be, this is one. The wastewater treatment plant was one. Post office, they're POSPF, aren't they? They might not be.
They are actually downtown commercial zone.
So, but it's a public building, right?
Right.
So let's say that's one. So right now, all those are the first ones that we've just prioritized. The second ones is buildings and structures in employment and or commercial zones. So that's pretty much everything else, I think. So two, backside of businesses in B. So these are both two. NB zone, two. So we've maybe gotten at it.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying, that sometimes a visual can be even more helpful to guide it.
Well, I wasn't even suggesting that. I mean, I'm in behavior modification, right? So, like, that's what I do.
Yeah.
When you tell somebody, no, you can't do this, no, you can't do this, like, they don't figure out what to do. If you say, here's what we want from you, they're going to figure out a whole lot faster. So just giving them that roadmap to, you want to do this, like, don't even ask about these other places. That way we're directing them and we're guiding them towards what we want by giving them a priority list.
And I like that. That's really helpful for staff, too, when they come in, for us to say, here's where you should look. Mm-hmm. So the 187120, that's, let's say, the goal. Are we getting there is a question. Are we getting our goal? So just to point out, right now, three is parks with existing lights. If we want to keep that or not, that's a question.
I'm okay with that.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know that they light their fields or anything, though.
It would include.
But you could do it on the building. I don't know that they would allow it. No. I want to know if the commission would entertain where we say excluding Tanner Landing MPOD or say microcells only in Tanner Landing. So that way it's a
stealth. Microcells.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, yeah, small cells, micro, and then a term I hadn't heard before this week was pico cells, which is typically a small cell on like a 30-foot pole or something like that. They're kind of cool because they can make them look like just like a normal street pole, or like they call them poles to nowhere, but you don't really notice them. They just kind of look like another city pole.
So maybe they're going to have, some lights inside their development, or I'm thinking of a little something on the building that's pretty discreet. So however you need to word that, does that make sense?
Yep, and I think when we get to development standards, I think everyone that goes on a building should meet that discreet. So I think we should make sure that we've gotten to that. So it would mostly be excluding monopoles, is that right? What about rooftop antennas?
Both.
So it'd exclude those two? Mm-hmm.
Excluding monopoles and rooftop.
Here's a weird thought. Could you actually create a nesting, like a bald eagle's nest, with one of those things on the side? So you're encouraging wildlife, not
we could require that at the top of every pole to put a basket up for now.
I think that's a great idea, Mary.
Well, that's a great suggestion.
Yeah.
I've actually seen that.
I like it.
So I moved from Austin about a year ago. And
love that.
And there were somebody back in the 70s, this is very off topic, somebody back in the 70s had some green parrots, or I'm not sure exactly, some sort of exotic bird that was not native to Austin, but they had nested in the cell towers. There was a huge colony in the cell towers of these green birds that you'd see flying around town. So, yeah.
Neat.
Yeah,
that's
neat.
All right.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any other thoughts?
Are there any other locations that you're seeing that you guys, I want to make sure, it's easy to to list what we can think of. It's hard to list what we can't think of.
I wonder about the new sports field that come through.
That'll be lit, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And it's my guess. That'll be private. So right. That's a great example of what would happen there.
And they're zoned.
What are they zoned right now? NB zone.
Not a park. It's so SOD.
That would show up as a 2 priority.
So it could happen.
NB zone. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And would the monopole be allowed?
But then you have the restrictions on how high, you said, Lynn, if it's at a. Even though it's private, if it's on a field, a sports field.
But if they have the lights, they could put a monopole.
Yeah. I think they could do a monopole there, though, right now. If they did on top of the lights, they'd have to meet all the athletic lights requirements. But they could put a monopole or a rooftop or any of the other things that we wouldn't want to see on our own parks.
There's a water tower at the top of Forster Woods.
Mm-hmm. That's included in here. Yeah. If it's in LDR, it wouldn't be allowed. If it's a public facility that's separately zoned, which I think it is. I think I can see the POSPF. It would be allowed right there. Sorry? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But we say that it has to be in a public zone, so it can't be a public building if located in the LDR zone. And to tell you the truth, I don't know what that would be, but maybe a water tower is on a public or on a private. For some reason, it didn't get it rezoned or something.
Mm-hmm. Salal Water has that.
So Qualley Valley, what is it, Athletic Association?
Yeah.
And
I don't think there'll be any room left for a monopole based on their site plan.
Yeah.
It's maxed out.
These are great examples.
They got to provide too much parking. No river pole.
What do we say? So water tower, that's actually one.
Above the ground. Which is fine. That makes sense.
I think it makes sense up there. Actually, yeah, it's tall. It's high up there. It's nobody's looking. Yeah, up at the top of it.
Well, there's that camera up there somewhere.
Yeah, there is.
Don't block the camera. You'll make Tom mad.
Don't tell Tom you know
right,
it's
Tom?
There.
Oh, wait. He's listening.
What camera?
All right.
No, Tom knows it's up there. He doesn't want anyone else to
climb that thing many times.
Oh yeah. Sometimes twice.
If I could ask a question, just bring our attention to the ticking time, and wondering kind of where we're at, not wanting to end this preemptively, but what is the objective with what we're going to accomplish tonight?
Depends on how many comments you have, really. The ultimate goal from staff would be you'd get pretty darn close to a recommendation tonight. The reason being, if we could take it to city council, if we could put it in our packet tomorrow for our CED packet next week, it would potentially make it so we wouldn't have to renew the interim ordinance, which includes SEPA, public hearing, noticing, everything. It would save that step. But I don't want to rush. I want you to feel comfortable with what you're doing. This actually is a pretty big visual impact to the city, so I want us to feel comfortable with where we're at and not rush it. If you looked through the development standards and you think you're going to have quite a few discussion points, then maybe we take another, maybe we don't.
I
maybe
have
we
one question.
Longer. Yeah. So,
that's it.
Do we think that we have gotten it here? The changes that I need to make are along North Bend Way for the EP2 zone.
Mm-hmm.
I need to make this change, so that's allowed. And then I'm going to move it to not to Southeast 140th.
Mm-hmm.
Not
with a 40-foot.
40-foot buffer. So just to make sure I'm remembering everything we just talked about, those are the two changes. Mm-hmm. What about in all the other parcels along North Bend Way, do you want to do a similar buffer where it's 40 feet? I think it would make sense to do a buffer because some parcels might be 200 feet deep and you're not going to have one till after the next parcel. Some parcels are not that deep and you would have one 40 or 50 feet back.
But I'm still going to look up 110 feet high. And if I want, in wanting, I don't know, a picture, even 60 feet gets in my way. Mm-hmm. So I'm no monopoles, no rooftop, but
so maybe small you cell. Should, instead of saying adjacent parcels, maybe we should say no monopoles X number of feet from North Bend Way. So it's not, it doesn't depend on the parcel size, because every parcel is different. So maybe it's no monopoles or rooftop antennas, 40, 60.
Thousand. 60,000.
I don't know how to word it.
We could also look at making monopoles shorter.
Well, that's what I was question I had here was if I think I heard that the monopoles had to be above like the trees, which we have tall trees here. So yeah. I was wondering where the 110, like how low could we go? We go below 110.
We already took it out of residential. It's going to be Eileen saying that. We're looking around, 110 is the standard. The shortest I found was 40 feet in residential zones.
Here's where I'm thinking. You either have a few tall ones or a lot of small ones. I don't know. So I hesitate to go too small. I'd rather put it in a couple places where I'm okay having the height.
I think it's a technical question. I mean, I think you'd need a carrier in here to tell you how high they need to be to get the coverage they need, because again, it gets to the macro cells do coverage, and then the micro cell or the micro small distributed antenna, everything but a macro cell gets to capacity, and then coverage. Remember too, is that's your federal. Kind of line you can't cross is they have to be able to close a significant capping coverage. So,
well, they'll certainly tell our city if 110 doesn't meet their need, but
I'm sure they will. Yeah.
But I think with the outlet mall or on top of ACE, the amount of coverage for our city, which is primarily our responsibility, seems to cover quite a swath.
Forgive my bias, but I feel like if they come in and say, well, we need it to be this high, that's based primarily on cost effectiveness and that, whereas they could probably get away with three that are, or you know, a larger number at a shorter height at a higher cost to them, but mm-hmm. that's going to meet what we want. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's where we take and they give.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
but I don't know where to draw that line.
I don't know. It's kind of pointless, but like, considering we're alone, but I mean, do we need to go into executive session at some point, or do y'all ever go into executive session?
Only if there's a legal case.
Yeah. Okay. I'm trying to word something to where I don't.
We wouldn't discuss like specific applicants or anything
okay.
like that.
Okay. I'm just trying to think of, you know, this.
As long as there's no one that's going to sue the city because of something, we don't have to go into executive session.
Sure, but you realize that you're building a legislative record mm-hmm. through these minutes, mm-hmm. through this tape, that could eventually see a lawsuit. I guess my caution would be that industry is looking to move forward aggressively. In the future, we've heard that a lot over the last 4 days. The 5G network is coming. It's supposedly that deadline is 2020, and they're looking really aggressively towards that.
Can you clarify how aggressively?
Extremely aggressive.
It's a race for market share.
And we want yeah. that. But we yeah. don't want to sacrifice what's important to us, which...
Okay.
I would be worried about
so can so you limit the height of monopoles along North yeah. Bend Way or the sensitive areas
within right. a certain distance?
Yeah.
I think my advice is just, like we said, talked about in the last meeting, is just give yourself an out, give yourself a safety hatch to where if there's something that will not work, unless it's 115 feet, you have that flexibility. Give yourself owner's
just a variance ability.
Yeah, I
mean, I'm pretty certain of where I want to protect the views, and to the point, like, along North Bend Way, I'd like to see no utility poles at all. I want all the utilities underground. And so, to me, to put it on a pole or anything along North Bend Way doesn't make sense on the north side. So...
For how far, though, is what I'm asking.
For the entire... from North Bend Way north to Mount Si.
Depth.
From North Bend Way to Mount Si.
Okay. So you're saying...
Yeah.
You're saying from North Bend Way to Mount Si. Okay.
Yes.
I was hearing you.
No. So when an artist paints a painting, when a photographer takes a picture, while all these other cities have developed in a certain way, we did something special.
And that would be from Bendigo itself.
Look at all the yeses. This is all the yeses.
I know. But we just said that it's allowed in EP2 on the north side of North Bend Way. So my clarifying question is...
On the south side.
But it's the north side of North Bend Way, south side of 140th, is what I heard.
Wait. Yeah. Start over.
I understood, maybe incorrectly, that in the EP2 zone,
yes.
Your point, that on the south side of 140th, I understood that this would all be allowed.
Correct.
So just to clarify, that's on the north side of North Bend Way.
Yep.
So when you say north side of North Bend Way, you mean from southeast 140th to Bendigo or to the city limits?
Primarily Bendigo. I think with Meadowbrook Farm, you have the best view.
Yeah.
So if we have a pole somewhere in between Meadowbrook Farm and Bendigo Boulevard, that ought to be a sufficient area. Yeah. But it ought to be a sufficient area of space to put a pole somewhere.
Right. So that no, on the north side, that's a sewage treatment plant?
That's not on North Bend Way. No. Only on North Bend Way.
So on the...
I thought you were saying just for the neighborhood business lots. And okay. Yes, I would, if you go down to...
I turn on the street all the time.
Ballarat?
So, if we're saying... What I'm saying, if you go down North Bend Way, all the way from North Bend Way to Mount Si, goes from southeast 140th the roundabout is at Orchard.
The downtown. So why are we going to compromise that?
Well, I'm saying to Thrasher. So nothing on the north side.
Go to Bendigo.
But I don't agree with that. I say there's a lot of buildings in here that are commercial or business, and maybe there's an opportunity there. And plus the public works back there. So I don't think we need to. That's not, to me, the best view if you can go just a little bit further and be in parkland and have a great view. So I'd rather sacrifice. I have to make a decision one place or another. I'm going to choose this place.
Okay, so how do we phrase that? So we don't want them along North Bend Way.
Right, just North Bend Way.
Visible.
Mm-hmm. On the north side. On the south side is fine. Monopoles.
You're not just talking adjacent to North Bend Way anymore. You're saying
the way to the end of city.
I'm saying just north as a general direction.
You could say to this Tuolumne Valley Trail.
Southeast 140th to Thrasher Avenue. Go on a pulse rooftop on the north side.
All the way to the trail. That's our boundary.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
I think we'll need to be a little more specific. We'll have to work on
the
our
other way was over here at Meadowbrook. So. 360 and our downtown core where we're going to have more development.
Yeah, Greg, I mean, I guess what I'm thinking is even with that development, or especially because of that development, there are some good views that, I mean, right now are tainted with holes, which you took a lot of pictures of. Hopefully those will eventually make them underground. Why do we want to mar that with, you know, a 120-foot pole that it might be 3 streets back, you can still see it.
That's what I'm saying. I'm okay with. We have to do one on that side and one over here and one over here. I'm saying this is kind of my preferred. It's the downtown businesses. It's where you want to create good signal, you know, for a group of people. It's where a provider would look for the most concentration of residents to have a good signal, right? It's kind of that thought process of a business anyway.
Well, and we've, I mean, just kind of to elaborate on that, you know, we've already directed them towards the public works and
the sewage treatment plant.
That's been done. Thank you. And hopefully, I guess I'm thinking like
water tower.
Or,
yep.
Yeah. So yeah, not super happy with that.
What about schools? Because schools are a
public
building in a POSPF zone.
If they have existing lighting.
Some
of them do.
No, I think that the language right now puts priorities not just on existing lighting. Existing lighting was only for parks. So for a school, they'd be considered a public facility. So I think the way it's written right now, a monopole would be allowed there if the school would allow it. Which might be okay, but just.
So North Bend Elementary next to the trail.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or Opstead.
Mm-hmm.
Just surrounded by LDR.
And you might get, just a consideration, you might get some concern from citizens, especially for an elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Okay, page 72, monopoles. New monopoles are not to exceed 110 feet in height. Do we want a group of monopoles, or do we want to say that if we have light poles, we don't want a string of monopoles of 110 feet? So is there any wording that we say or that has been said about how many can be in a string of poles is my only question. Is there something we should set as a standard, like one every 12 or one every mile? You know, but does that then get in the conflict of competition? Because if we allow one company who got in and the other person can't, then we've just now influenced the market unfairly, so...
Well, our first prioritization is co-location.
So if one got in, then they would have
to
allow.
They would co-locate on each other. I don't know how, are they required to allow someone to co-locate? Are they required to work together? And
That's a good question. I think they are. I don't think mm-hmm. they can. I mean, it happens all the time. They hate doing it, but this is a common thing. And if co-location is the first priority, then I think then the city can force them into that.
Okay.
So.
But you could add language. Like a radius buffer you're looking for.
Co-location in a mile area would be required.
So no two monopoles shall be within a mile radius of one another, or whatever you choose.
Because if you're saying that it's a 3 mile range,
I think they said about 2 miles.
2 miles,
and a half in urban area, Seattle or something.
And again, I think could that be the variance that if they show that if they absolutely
mm-hmm.
have to have one within, there would be the variance allowed. Mm.
And I forget the...
I mean, I'd be fine with a half mile. Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to get away from is seeing a
mm-hmm.
line of them.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah. I don't know. Just practical. If speaking, I don't know that I've ever seen that, even in, I mean, dense urban areas, but that's not to say, it doesn't exist,
right.
It's just because
so
I haven't
also,
seen it.
You know,
sorry,
seems
I'm in.
Like it's okay to put it on here if it's not going to be an issue. Then it wouldn't be challenged.
So how should we word that? It's required in a half-mile radius rather than citing a new pole, or no new pole can be cited within a half-mile radius of another, co-location is required.
Mm-hmm. I get what you're getting at. You're trying to avoid pole proliferation.
Yes.
Well, so maybe something like, well, co-location is preferred if it can be demonstrated that it is not feasible, no two monopoles shall be located within.
Unless you demonstrate that it's not feasible or an agreement can't be reached, co-location is required by the city for a monopole in a half-mile radius or something like that.
What is everyone else thinking for distance-wise? Does that sound reasonable?
If it's a two-mile range.
Yeah, maybe a mile. Yeah.
Mile radius?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty big structure.
Yeah. Okay. Mile radius.
I think practically speaking, you'd probably be looking at a mix of poles
mm-hmm.
and then antennas on top of rooftops or
block
towers, things like that. So.
They put one and then ping.
So I can work on this language. What I wrote right now, while co-location is preferred, if it is demonstrated that co-location is not feasible, in no case shall two monopoles be located within a mile radius of one another.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something to that effect. That takes care of my burning issue.
So I had highlighted 110 feet. We touched on it a little bit. We had talked about lowering that at the last meeting. I don't think we ever came to a decision. I heard a little bit of discussion about it.
Yeah. I, for one, would rather see fewer higher poles. And if what Eileen just said, you know, they'll put one high pole and then smaller antennas to feed off that.
And that one high pole won't open up a door to more through this federal.
So,
addendum is the word that's in my head.
Yeah, the EFM, the Eligible Facilities Modification. The Eligible Facilities Modification is fatter, bigger. The way it was sold was we should be able to switch out things that already exist without having to go back through zoning.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just like a one for one. It's like a one for 110 or whatever, you know, a little bit incrementally larger. So, but they do, I mean, I feel like with all, these aren't technically a utility, but it's helpful to think of them in those terms. Utility infrastructure tends to attract the utility infrastructure because once you have it there, it's easier to set other things there because then you're simply adding to what's there as opposed to striking a smart angle.
Okay. Would it make sense to change the wording to instead of putting a specific height, saying, shoot, I just had
a maximum.
You know, so something reasonable, site specific, but instead of a hard and fast number.
Well, what Lynn was saying on the rooftops, you were saying for however far it was set back can be the pole height. So if you're 30 feet back, you could have a 30-foot pole. Are you thinking something along those lines?
No, although that makes sense. I guess what I was thinking more was, you know, a site that has a certain amount of surrounding trees that are a certain age and are therefore expected to grow a certain amount, it would make sense to be a certain height. Whereas in another area that's surrounded primarily by buildings, line of sight is a whole lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, 110 feet would just be excessive and unnecessary.
Yeah.
Whereas a 45-foot one, because of the surrounding buildings, would be 35 feet.
So building or monopole heights are limited in a forested area to X, and then what would we say into
No, I think more what you're looking for is what we've seen in some of the cities where it's more up, they have to demonstrate, they have to show what they need, and then it's up to staff to say yes or no. That's a little more what I'm hearing you say that I've seen.
Yeah, I think more latitude in judgment in the moment.
Actually, the reason that we went away from that, because we did talk about that, is it is it's easier for staff to make decisions and to move forward if there's parameters to work within, instead of every time being like, well, it depends, and then it's a little more subjective and harder for us and easier to... That's my initial thoughts on it. I don't know if you have other thoughts, but that is something cities do. So
then they could come in and say, "Well, we need 240 feet." I don't know.
Yeah, you defend yourself, and you don't have any anything to defend yourself with.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder if you should say though.
Yeah.
Because certain places 110 would blend a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be more appropriate.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like all things
must fit in the area that they're being sited, and therefore height limited where appropriate. It's, you know, something that gives you just some latitude and to adhere to is that you can do this without being specific. And then, you know, in forested areas, you know, additional heights can be granted by the director of.
Yeah, how do we combine those? I mean, you know, say what I was suggesting, not to exceed 110 feet.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's language we could get to something like they can't be taller than they have to.
Because then you can always fall back on that. Well, I told you, this is the rule, 110.
I have an idea of where to look to for code line. Because in the city of Seattle, they do that in practice. Okay. So I suspect maybe we should look at their code language and see what they've got there.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I live in one of those mixed use, and they have an antenna on top, and it's, you know, there's a limit. And just like in North Bend, where you have, like, a limit, I think it's, like, 4 stories high, and that's as tall as you can go. And so there doesn't need to be a monopole, right? You just stick something on top, and you have the line of sight.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good job, Mr. Funtrap. Anything further? Any other changes or questions?
I'll have to research that to figure out how that should what that language should look like.
Well, Lynn, I think you did an excellent job because it's really hard for me to not have a bunch of red flags.
You just like her more.
No,
I'm just kidding.
No. Yes, sir.
Move adjourned.
What?
1 second on your motion. Well, we did run late.
Just a little.
Want to thank Ms. Kiefer for all her input and for being here at this late hour. Thank you, Jamie, for all your help in getting our master plan overlay district and ordinances, and both of you for giving your input on all our questions that we had. I appreciate that very much.
Thanks for coming prepared.
So, clarify on this. You're going to go ahead and take it to council committee?
With these changes?
And you guys are good? Do you need a motion? Or?
No, I think we're good.
Do you want to see it again?
See it one more time. And
so,
but I think we're pretty final. I don't think we have any more changes.
So, you have to take it by the second meeting in October, right?
What's that?
The EFM ordinance we have not gone through. That was the really, really extra fun one that read very.
The modifications,
yes.
So, yeah, one ordinance at a time.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Plan that for the October 12th meeting.
Okay. I just want to make sure we're not following anything that's falling
through the cracks. No, I think
this one has.
That's a wireless one.
A candidate debate.
I'm happy to be here. Great.
I'll be having fun, so you guys have fun.
I think this one really has
to. Yeah.
The other one's all legal.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Anything for good of the order?
I would like to say that that the action piece is good in the agenda.
Hey, that was my idea. Right. Action.
What are we doing? What are you asking of us?
Yeah.
Right.
It wasn't on the wireless.
Yeah, we didn't know.
I didn't want to be greedy. Just noticed that. Like,
right.
but yeah, like that's just helpful.
Good point. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, continue that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we still have to tell David it was a long meeting. He'll be like, "What?"
Blame it on me.
Yeah.
Discussion. It's just, you know, it's how you get to the end.
Yep.
We the Planning Commission of North Bend, adhere to the Open Public Records Meeting Act. Hmm. We would have all our discussions here at the table.
Right.
Therefore, our meetings go long.
Yep.
Okay. Commissioner Ryan.
I got nothing.
I got another weird one, maybe. Does anyone know the gentleman that was out in downtown today looking like a security guard or a police officer walking back and forth, sometimes looking bored, I was told. Did we pay for him? Mm. Did we know who that gentleman was?
Interesting.
I have no idea. I haven't heard it.
Okay, I'll do some research.
Heard of it.
Ask Tom Moore. He would probably know.
I was going to talk to him.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the downtown guy.
Calls.
Huh.
Like, do you know anything about this?
No.
No one recognized him as being part of our
That's weird.
It's a crime if he's impersonating a police officer.
In a uniform.
Strap.
I didn't ask that question.
Mm. What do you need?
Can I grab the map back to work on this?
Yeah.
Just the map. Do you have notes on your hand again?
Second.
We have a motion to adjourn by Commissioner Von Trapp and a second by Commissioner Heller. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Commission is adjourned at 10:24. Thank you all.